Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call this meeting of the Citizens Coinage Advisory Committee for Wednesday, September 18th, 2019, to order. Before we begin, I want to introduce the members of the committee, and please respond present when I call your name. Sam Gill. Robert Hogue. Eric Jansen.
Present.
Dr. Dean Kulowski. On the phone.
Present.
Mary Lannan.
Present.
Michael Moran.
Here.
Robin Solomon.
Present.
Donald Scrinci.
Present.
Jeannie Stephen Solomon.
Present.
Dennis Tucker.
Present.
And I'm the chairman, Tommy Ram. Thank you all for being here today.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Today's agenda includes the presentation of the Public Service Award by Director David Ryder to the CCAC member, Mr. Eric Jansen. A discussion of letters to the Secretary and the minutes from our July 17, 2019 meeting. A review and discussion of the reverse candidate designs for the 2020 American Innovation Dollar. And those are the coins for Connecticut, Massachusetts, Maryland, and South Carolina. We will also have a review and discussion of the obverse and reverse candidate designs for the USS Indianapolis Congressional Gold Medal. And then finally, we will have a review and discussion of the obverse and reverse candidate designs for the Chinese American Veterans of World War II Congressional Gold Medal. Before we begin, are there members of the press in attendance or on the phone today? Anyone in attendance first?
Brandon Hall with Coin Update. Mike Gutzer with Coin News.
Anyone else? Thanks for being with us. Finally, for the record, I'll also acknowledge the following Mint staff that are participating in today's public meeting. First of all, April Stafford, Chief Office of Design Management, and program managers from that office include Vanessa Frank, Megan Sullivan, Pam Bohr, and Roger Vasquez. Also with us today is the Mint Chief Engraver, Joe Mena. Manager of Design and Engraving, Ron Harrigal. We have the liaison to the CCAC, Jennifer Warren. We have our counsel to the CCAC, Mr. Greg Wyman, and Deputy Director of Legislative Affairs, Betty Birdsong. I'd like to begin with the minute. Are there any issues that we need to be addressed at this time? Seeing none, then the first item of agenda is the review and approval of the minutes and the secretary letters from our last meeting. Are there any comments on the documents? Hearing none, may I entertain a motion to approve the minutes and letters?
So moved.
Second, we have Robert. All those in favor signify saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Thank you. Motion approved. First order of business today is for our committee to make the presentation of the United States Mint Public Service Award to our colleague, Mr. Eric Jansen. Mr. Jansen has served two terms from 2011 to 2019 with the CCAC as a member representing the interest of general public. Mr. Jansen will complete his service to our organization effective September 30th, which makes this his last meeting. In recognition of his service, the Director of the United States Mint, Mr. David J. Ryder, will present the award to Mr. Eric Jansen, Director Ryder. Let's give him some encouragement here.
Need the microphone. Can somebody give the director a microphone? For the record, yes.
Oh, sure. For the record. Being the Mint director, you get to do a lot of interesting things, but you also have to make a lot of tough decisions sometimes. The easy decisions are always easy to make. The tough decisions are not so easy. In the case of Eric, I had to make a tough decision and tell Eric that he wasn't going to be going forth for a third term, not because Eric wasn't qualified. Eric is amongst the most qualified individuals in this room, but because I have a fundamental belief that new blood is always good, change is good, but in this case, Eric, you're going to be tough to be replaced as the advisor to me on a number of occasions. I have always appreciated your candor, your professionalism, your knowledge for numismatics, numismatics from all over the world. I sat in backs of room and listened to you talk at ANA convention. You have a wealth of knowledge that is going to be very hard to replace. And as I've told you in several personal notes, that I will always still reach out to you. You are an exemplary man. I've appreciated all that you've done. And this award, I think, is just an extremely small token of what I would much prefer to give you, but I have to be careful. But this award, it's got the Alexander Hamilton Award medal on it. I think it's befitting of what you've done for the U.S. government, for the United States Mint, and all of us in this room will be eternally grateful for the service that you've done. I get to Seattle every so often. In fact, I'm going to be there soon. I'm going up to Anchorage, Alaska to announce the Alaskan State Court in a couple weeks, maybe shorter than that. So maybe we can get together then. Never know. But if you could come up and accept this award, I think everybody in this room will share and acknowledge the great job that Eric has done. And for that, I am, as I said, very grateful and want to say congratulations. Job well done. The two tallest guys in the room.
Microphone.
I'll only say the following. Keep the art great. Keep the art great. There is incredible talent at the Mint these days for the program management here, for the artistic charges that go out. The AIP program is just the beginning of letting sculptors in this country know there's a place for them, so that we get more and more sculpting talent and not just artistic talent, because everybody in this room has come to learn that those are two very, very different things. Keep the criticism kind but firm. And I'm hoping that there's an opportunity for the committee to add to the development of the artistic charges, the review of the art, so that there's a time when we actually get a chance to do a postmortem on the sculpts. Because the way it is now, the way we've got disparate art solicitation and sculpting production, these really are an artificial dichotomy that needs to be merged back together. And so I'm hoping that in the future, the committee will get a chance to make comments on whether the energy and the emotion and the original intentions of the artwork got carried forward in the sculpt. Because I think there's a huge opportunity for a loss and an even larger opportunity to carry forth the great art meaning. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Director Ryder, and Eric, on behalf of your colleagues here, we wish you all the best, certainly, but also thank you for the years of dedication to the CCAC, and we continue to always look forward to hearing some thoughts. So,
thank you.
Thank you. Now, let us turn to April Stafford, Chief of the Mint's Office of Design Management, to present the reverse candidate designs for the Connecticut 2020 American Innovation Dollar Coins. April?
Thank you. It is Public Law 115-197, the American Innovation Dollar Coin Act, that requires the Secretary of the Treasury to mint and issue dollar coins with a reverse design honoring innovation or innovators from each state in the Union, the territories, and the District of Columbia. In accordance with this legislation, the Mint worked with the governors of the four states being honored in 2020 to develop design concepts for the coins. These concepts have been approved by the Secretary of the Treasury. The governors were asked to propose from 1 to 3 design concepts, and artists created designs based on all the concepts proposed and subsequently approved by the Secretary. The advisory committees are not obligated to choose a particular theme and then select a design from that theme. Rather, they can recommend the design they believe will create the best coin. The states that feel strongly about a particular theme may choose to submit only one. Others choose to highlight a variety of innovations or innovators tied to their state. The Mint worked with liaisons and experts from each state in developing the following designs. And I should note that all of the governor's offices received the portfolio you're reviewing today, and they're comfortable with what they see. And those that have specific preferences, we will share that as we move along. For Connecticut, the first theme, the Colt Armory. Combining the use of interchangeable parts, precision machining, and assembly in the production of firearms, the Colt Armory was a major innovation in manufacturing. The Colt Armory was the first to widely commercialize the use of interchangeable parts, was a leader in assembly line practice, and became a training ground in manufacturing technology. Design 1 depicts the iconic onion dome atop the Colt Armory. The additional inscription is Colt Armory. Design 2 depicts a horse with a lance in its teeth, reminiscent of a symbol used by the Colt Armory. Gears in the background represent manufacturing and industry. The additional inscriptions are Colt Armory and Manufacturing Innovation. Designs 3 and 4 feature the silhouette of the iconic Colt Armory dome with a series of gears representing manufacturing and industry. The additional inscriptions are Colt Armory and Manufacturing Innovation. Design 5 depicts elements from 5 different products that were made using Colt's methods: bicycles, sewing machines, buttons, typewriters, and revolvers. Moving on to another theme, the Gerber Variable Scale. While in college, H. Joseph Gerber invented the Gerber Variable Scale, often called the most revolutionary engineering tool since the slide rule. The scale uses a triangular calibrated spring as a computing element to eliminate all scaling and conversions between numerics and graphics. It assists in replotting curves and in interpolating contour lines from observed data. It can also be used to convert between proportional scales, for instance, when enlarging or reducing an engineering drawing. By the 1950s, the variable scale was one of the most widely used tools for engineers and architects all over the world. Design 6, 6A, 7, and 7A depict the Gerber variable scale in use by an engineer or architect. Design 6, 6A, 7, and 7A. Design 8 depicts the Gerber variable scale being used to increase a geometric shape by 200%, a shape which resembles the state of Connecticut. The additional inscription is Gerber variable scale. Design 9 depicts an engineer holding a Gerber variable scale. The additional inscription is Gerber variable scale. Design 10 depicts the hands of an engineer using the Gerber variable scale to calculate and plot out points of orientation. The inscription is Gerber variable scale. And finally, the last design theme for Connecticut, the USS Nautilus. The USS Nautilus was the world's first operational nuclear-powered submarine. Nuclear propulsion is independent of air, and thus nuclear-powered submarines can remain submerged much longer than diesel-electric submarines. The Nautilus was the first submarine to complete a submerged transit of the North Pole. The development of nuclear-powered submarines revolutionized the industry with higher speed, better survivability, and significant endurance. Design 11 depicts the USS Nautilus breaking surface in the Arctic region, with the additional inscription USS Nautilus. 12 depicts the USS Nautilus in the Arctic with a polar bear in the foreground, with the additional inscription USS Nautilus. Designs 13, 14, and 14A depict the USS Nautilus at sea. The additional inscriptions are USS Nautilus, Nuclear Propulsion, and 1952 to 1955, the years during which the Nautilus was constructed. This is Design 13, 14, and 14A. Design 15 features the USS Nautilus against the outline of an atom representing the uranium-powered nuclear reactor that powers the submarine. Additional inscriptions are USS Nautilus, Nuclear Propulsion, and 1952 to 1955, the years during which the Nautilus was constructed. Design 16 depicts the Nautilus beneath the surface of the Arctic. An atom represents the uranium-powered nuclear reactor that powers the submarine, with an additional inscription naming the submarine. Would you like me to pause there while you deliberate, or shall I go through all three states?
What's the desire of the committee to do? Let's focus on one state at a time, I think.
Okay. Good move.
Okay. I asked the question and the answer. I don't know. Any technical questions from the committee about the designs before we begin our general discussion?
What was the preference? Is there a preference?
No preference among the themes and no preference among the designs. They're comfortable with the portfolio.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's begin our considerations. I ask that the members please try and keep their comments to around the five-minute time frame. And with that, let's begin with Eric. Eric.
Of the three topics here, I think two of them are exceptionally challenging to the artists. I thought, as I looked at the Colt Armory as well as the Gerber scale, quite frankly, and not critically, but I think just very difficult topics, and I didn't see any symbols which I felt were really brought to the surface that would drive the message home to anybody observing this coin. And so I'm actually going to limit my comments to what I think is the more workable topic, which is Nautilus. That isn't to say the artists haven't put their best foot forward on the other two. I just find the story is so difficult and the symbols so evasive that I didn't see anything that really worked for me. So when I do turn to the Nautilus, I am mindful that this is a small palette, and the challenge of translating what are grayscale drawings into an effective sculpt and a coin design. I'm going to favor design CT-15 really for a couple of simple reasons. One, I think the atomic hexagonal symbol is such an eye-catcher. I'm not aware that it's been used on coinage very much, if at all. And in that sense, it looks like virgin territory to me that we might be able to take advantage of here. I'm not especially fond of the artistic piece of this. It's more of a graphical piece. I think it'll be fairly straightforward to sculpt. I might recommend that the USS Nautilus be done in Cuse, not the ship, but the actual hard lettering here. I did look at 16, and what concerns me on 16 is the essential perspective here, which I'm fearful would be lost in even a great sculpt because of the subtlety of the water and waves above us and the nondescript waves in the bottom. I think it would be very hard to keep this coin from just devolving into a funny trapezoid on the metal. So I kind of discounted design 16. I look forward to hearing comments from others on the other ideas as well as this idea, but I'm going to favor design 15.
Thank you, Eric. Donald.
So I think I like the... You know, I think the design of 7 is an interesting design, and that's the Gerber scale. You know, even though it might not be, you know, terribly obvious what that is without saying Gerber variable scale underneath it. But I think where the Nautilus loses me is that it's just another military theme. And we do so many military, you know, it seems like every other commemorative is a military commemorative. You know, I just really don't want to approve, you know, if we don't have to pick a military theme on a coin, I'd rather not pick a military theme on a coin. And I don't think any of these designs really stand out for this series. I think what we're going for with this series, you know, is that kind of graphic look, you know, and I think that's what's going to distinguish this series as a series. You know, we did it from the very first one with the gears, you know, and I think we should really send a clear message to the artists that, you know, we're looking for the series to be cohesive in that way, you know, that it should be. And I don't want to say, I don't want to use the word graphic because I know that's the incorrect word. That's not the word I'm looking for. And I don't want to use the word geometric. I don't want to use the word cubist. I don't want to use the word
maybe non-figural.
Well, yeah.
Define it by what it's not.
It would definitely be non-figural. I think this would be a non-figural series. You know, this is perfect for a non-figural series. You know, this is an object series.
Emblematic,
right? Objects, you know, and something like this, you know, and objects, and this is a good way to juxtapose designs. I mean, juxtapose, you know, kind of a geographic, you know, designs. So it's pretty in that sense, goes with the series. So when I saw it, you know, absent some preference from the state, you know, I certainly don't want to do, you know, I certainly don't think we need to do the cult armory. I didn't even really consider that, you know, and so I just, I mean, that was my thinking. I didn't consider cult armory as something to do, and I discounted the Nautilus because it's military. And we just do so much of that. So, you know, and then I saw these 7 and 7A, you know, and I think we'd probably have to hone in on which of the two, 7 or 7A, because they both have merit. You know, and then do we put the words under there in some way? You know, do we say Gerber variable scale like they did in 8? They had Gerber variable scale. You know, and 8 was, and, you know, and look, that was creative too. I mean, 8, you know, to use the state's image as a graphic, that's a creative coin too. So I'd like to hear, as everyone speaks, you know, what they think of that. I think honing in on one of these, I mean, honing in on either 7, 7A, or even 8, is the way to go with this coin.
Thank you, Don. Janie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am going to go directly to 8 because I mentioned this is very creative, and I also think it's very simple. I like the fact that there's an enlargement. So if we're trying to bring a new generation to our hobby or to our numismatic goal here, then I think it actually tells us all that this is a device to enlarge, you know, images. And here it has it very simply. I think it would be struck very well. I think that it would be good. I have to go with that one for that particular theme, and I would like to make a comment on 13, where it's just very, very simple, USS Nautilus. If we went with the Nautilus thing, but I agree with Donald. We do a lot of military, and I think we need to encompass other fields. Thank you.
Thank you, Janie. Michael.
received, obviously had troubles with this particular state. I get the reason for the selection of Colt because of the interchangeability of parts and the forerunner of mass production, but I am troubled by using it as a theme for, in particular for Connecticut. I agree with Jeannie that when you go to the Gerber variable scale, that 8 is probably the best. It shows somewhat of what can be done with the scale. The others, to me, are a little too abstract. I agree with Donald that I like the I won't try and put it in words, but that abstract tone that we sat with the original first metal with the gears, etc. I'm not sure we're going to be able to keep it for all the states, but I hope that it, as a theme, it does dominate. When you go to the Nautilus representations, I'm troubled by the dominance of the USS in most of the designs. It dominates the entire opera, argue reverse. And I threw them out as a result of that. I do like the last one, and I disagree. I'm 16, I think it can be coined. I don't think you put it in the underground waves in there, but I think the underneath sides of the icebergs would be very dramatic on the coins. I'll be giving it some points. The polar bear, no, that doesn't get it because I don't think the Nautilus would be that close to shore area because that polar bear is certainly not even got there in the Arctic in the middle of an ice mass with no food. So I think that concludes my comments.
Thank you, Michael. Dr. Dean.
I'm going to start out by talking about number one. I think if the MIMP were ever to do a series for states about American architecture, the Colt Armory would be a very strong candidate. And if Hartford, Connecticut ever got a Major League Baseball team, I would advise them, if they were able to build a stadium near the Colt Armory and copy some of its themes maybe to integrate it in. But my problem with Colt Armory is that it's almost asking us in a way to trust that manufacturing and innovation happen there with these interchangeable parts. And things. We don't get a lot of specificity. And we get that with design number 5, but without, the description, I couldn't make out, the button and the revolver and the keys to the typewriter. So those were my thoughts on Colt Armory. Like my colleagues, I was very, very drawn to number 8 for the Gerber variable scale. I think that was really a very clever design. And as Jeannie was saying, it gives you a sense. I like that kind of reinforcing. A little bit of geography here for the kids who are maybe collecting coins, that this is Connecticut, and also this is what Connecticut looks like. So it does quite a bit. And then with the Nautilus, I find myself agreeing a lot with Mike. I think USS Nautilus, I threw that out because it dominated. Same thing with the polar bear, I wasn't persuaded. Nobody has said anything in favor of 11. I kind of liked 11 because it's simple. I think, though, there's got to be something, if you were to go with 11, about nuclear propulsion and why this is significant. My understanding is there was a USS Nautilus as a submarine in World War II. There was an earlier one, so that would have to be made clear. And, I took another look at 16, so like Mike, I'm going to be giving some points to 16.
Thank you, Dean.
And those are my comments.
Thank you. Robert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
My preference probably is for the Nautilus theme, but I'd like to address these other issues. First of all, I had too little information in my mind about the Gerber scale, knowing absolutely nothing about it before having encountered it here. Of the designs for the Gerber scale, I probably would prefer number 8, but I think it may be a little bit two-dimensional for a metal. This is a flat piece.
For the Cold Armory, I'm troubled by actually perhaps having too much information, having formerly been a student of antique arms. First of all, Colt started out with his innovations in New Jersey, so that would not be really appropriate for a Connecticut design. Connecticut was the home of the inventions of Eli Whitney, who, after developing the cotton gin, went into arms manufacture, doing the interchangeability of parts, things like this. And second, this was the home of the Springfield Armory, Connecticut, which was the major arms manufacturer and innovator in terms of production for these things. So I think that the Colt theme is really not very appropriate. For the Nautilus, I like the design of number 11 because of its simplicity. I like the design of number 16. It adds a little bit of mystery. And the context of an underwater view is nice. But actually, my preference goes to number 12, probably because of the polar bear. You know, he's somewhat irrelevant, perhaps. The Nautilus may not have come that closely in contact with him. But I can see this as a piece offering some possibility for depths of relief and context as a sculpt. And I like having a polar bear there. This is an endangered species. And also, this reduces the USS Nautilus somewhat. And I think that this is an appropriate design to the extent that really the name Nautilus is not only a U.S. submarine. This is an allusion to the innovative process developed by Jules Verne in the famous Nautilus, the Captain Nemo submarine of the 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. So I think that really it's no question. I think the Nautilus is by far the superior choice for Connecticut. It was developed in the state and became a worldwide phenomenon. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. Dennis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I found myself drawn to a lot of the designs that have helpful inscriptions. And I agree with a lot of our colleagues here that some of these themes really need that. CT-05 is very graphically inviting, but it really requires an outside explanation to make sense to the viewer. CT-02 has that inscription. It's got manufacturing innovation on it. I found that helpful. For various reasons, I don't think that the Colt Armory is the best topic to focus on for Connecticut. The Gerber variable scale, I would point out, is in the Smithsonian. We've discussed how it's revolutionized modern engineering and architecture. My thought was that the best designs in that concept were the ones that actually showed the instrument in use. So I was drawn to CT-10. And I know that that design is very fine. It's very finely detailed, and we're not dealing with a large canvas. So I know that there might be design challenges there. Ron and Joe could speak to that possibly. But I liked having the human element of someone actually putting this device to its proper use. For the Nautilus, I actually was drawn to CT-16. This is an intriguing design. I think Robert spoke to it very eloquently. It's an unusual view, and it's a perspective that's never been used on U.S. coinage before. So that makes it innovative, which is, you know, well within the bailiwick of this program. So I like CT-16. I would also point out, Donald, I understand your concern about military themes and the emphasis on military topics. The scientific basis of nuclear propulsion, you know, goes beyond only military applications. It gets to exploration, as Robert mentioned, you know, the innovation of going back to Jules Verne and in that sense of exploring our world and doing it well and doing it efficiently, the way nuclear propulsion does. I think those are my remarks. Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis. Sam.
Thank you, Tom.
I thought all three of these themes were very good. The Colt Armory is really symbolic of industrial improvement, notwithstanding what Robert said, because I know that he added a lot of color to it that I don't have. But I like the Colt Armory very much because it did participate in the industrialization of the country in manufacturing. The Gerber variable scale was very interesting to me, and it was news to me because I wasn't familiar with it. I like Gene's choice there of CT08 if that were chosen, if that innovation was chosen. And the Nautilus was certainly something I remember as a child, and it was a huge, huge deal. And it was a true innovation. And I like CT16 as well. So whatever way we end up here would be fine with me. I found the Gerber scale a little bit hard to depict. So if you see it on the back of a coin, you're not going to naturally know what it is. But you probably could figure out the Colt Armory, particularly if you chose the CT02, which is the pony. And from a sales perspective, and I know the Mint cares about this, the Colt Armory or the Nautilus are going to sell better. They just are, because there are lots of people that are going to know exactly what they are. So those are my comments, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Sam. And, you know, that's obviously a consideration as well as to, you know, animals, whether it be the polar bear or whether it be the horse, you know, they do sell. That's right. Mary.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am firmly in the Donald Gene camp in terms of what I think is appropriate for Connecticut. One of the things that I was particularly drawn to, although I do admit that I liked the graphics on CT05 for the Colt Armory, but it would need to be explained to someone, but that graphically was appealing to me. I like CT08. It's clean. Perhaps it will, with the Gerber variable scale written on it, somebody might look it up. But the idea that they've enlarged the state of Connecticut for a Connecticut coin, I think is really very important. Again, with the military theme, I remember the Nautilus too. My preference in that group would be CT11. I just think it's a really dramatic use of how powerful that submarine must have been. Whereas, I don't know if anybody's mentioned this, but in CT16, the first time I looked at it, I thought, why are those meteorites hitting that submarine? So it's the idea of being underwater that it didn't quite get there for me. So I wanted the power of CT11. But my my chosen design is going to be CT08 because of the cleanness of it. And it's a simplified way of showing exactly what it does. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mary. And Robin.
For the Colt Armory, I was looking at the pure design side of it, as well as the history interpretation, and CT3. That had the silhouette of the dome, the gears, and then the additional words of manufacturing and innovation, I thought were significant. The potential for highs and lows and within this design, I think, could make it quite beautiful. And it had all of the elements that appealed to me to tell that story. I liked manufacturing and innovation added because it also brings it forward. It's not just the Colt Armory. It's an important part of American manufacturing. The Gerber scale, I, of course, have to go with CT 8, that more abstract design, very clean. The fact that the Gerber variable scale is written on it, I think it's very important. And the enlargement of the state of Connecticut gives it extra punch. Then with the Nautilus, I liked also CT 16. And I think that it has a lot of possibilities for a beautiful coin, meteorites notwithstanding. But it could be shown to great advantage with the very skillful sculpting. And I like, too, the idea that this is something that's not been shown before in our coinage. Overall, I think I would go with CT 8 to represent the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Robin. And before I make my comments, Greg has some comments regarding the score sheet.
Yeah, I'm about to pass out the score sheet as we normally do this time, but I wanted to comment. I don't know if this particular program will be as material to this, but where you see 6 and 6A or 7 and 7A or 14 and 14A, remember, keeping in mind that this is a tool for the organization, it's sometimes best to possibly give them the same score, and then if by some chance that rises to the top, because these are designs that are substantially the same design with some minor variations, if you can give them the same score, then if they do rise to the top, you can have a subsequent discussion about which one is the more appropriate one to recommend. But I wanted to mention that before we pass out the sheets.
Thank you, Greg. You know, when I get the book and I look at the designs and the themes, particularly this particular series that we're looking at, I just try and, you know, hit the designs, which one my gut feeling is about. And then I also look at the historic side of it as well. It's, you know, which one might have come first, which one might have been more significant. And, you know, I appreciate all of our discussion this morning because I think that, you know, a lot of good ideas here. And the thing is, I think we have a lot of right ideas. I think that for a change, we have a lot of right ideas. And what might end up happening is that we end up with recommending, you know, ranking them, and depending how this vote turns out. But before we vote, I'd like to turn it over to our chief engraver, Joe, to make a few comments on the designs. If you have any thoughts before you've heard our discussion. Do you want to talk about any negative space or anything possible as it would relate to any of the designs that were suggested?
I'll try not to be pedantic, and this will be longer than any other comment I'll make going forward if I continue to do this. Is it on?
Yeah. Now it is.
I mean, I don't want to sound pedantic. This will be a longer introduction, just where I'm coming from, than I'll make again. But, you know, I've heard the committee often talk about storyboarding and also talk about the simplicity of symbols and the preference for that kind of thing. And I would, I understand that, and I just have a slightly different approach. My approach for my training, there's the understanding of this thing called formal composition. In Russia, they call it formana composite. It just means the abstract architectural underpinning behind a painting, a sculpture, or a relief, in either a relief sculpture or a sculpture fully in the round. And this architectural underpinning is very similar to, if anyone's read Wassily Kandinsky's Point, Line, and Plane, or there's a draftsman named Harold Speed who wrote a book called The Practice in Science and Drawing. And it's basically the lines and the structure and the composition that it doesn't matter how much detail it's music. And no matter how much detail you want to put on, it's the tune that, whether you want to turn it into just a song or a symphony, it's that tune that is essential to the work of art. So I'm just using that to kind of excuse my first choice. I like CT06 because I think it's the most sculptural and dynamic of the set. For the Gerber scale, because the plane goes backwards in space. You have the scale going off in a diagonal, and then the twist of the paper a little bit. The diagonals of the arms going up, echoed by the diagonal on the side. For me as a sculptor, that would be the most interesting one to sculpt. Just say it just like that.
I like CT707, the sets. I think 07A is cooler because it allows for more polish by having more negative space there. And then for the Nautilus, I like the CT16 because it's something very unique. I mean, it reminds me of when I, this is anecdotal. I'll stay away from that stuff. I don't want to get too into it. It's just a really interesting underwater perspective of a submarine that we've seen many submarines on U.S. Mint coins and metals, but I don't believe we've ever seen anything like this. We're looking at the underside of the ocean, and the artistically, I think the sub actually has some interesting forms on it. The roundness on the bottom and the narrowness of the top that leads to the front onto a curve. So I think we could sculpt this in a very dynamic way. And that's it. So if that's cool that I say it like that, or if it's taking up too much time, you just let me know.
No, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Perfect. I think that's good information as we go forward. Like I said, there's a lot of right answers here regarding these themes, and vote accordingly.
At this point, you can complete your ballots and pass them down. And to Dr. Kozlowski, you have feel free to email me your ballot at your pleasure.
Well, they're being turned in. You may, if you need to take a 5-minute break while we're.
Do you want to move on to next?
We can tabulate while we go on.
Okay.
Yeah. Just give everybody another minute and then we'll start the next round. I think we're in a short recess.
What did you do? Is that hot or cold?
Our next discussion as the votes are tabulated. And April, if you don't mind, let's talk about the 2020 American Innovation Coin from the state of Massachusetts.
Yes, sir. The first theme is the telephone. In 1876, Alexander Graham Bell invented the telephone, and the impacts of this innovation are felt around the world every day. Today, telephones are used to speak with friends and family, and also for email, social media, surfing the internet, and countless other methods of communication. Design 1.
depicts the dial of an early rotary dial telephone. The additional inscription is telephone. Design 2 depicts the telephone as drawn in Bell's patent. The inscriptions, Massachusetts, patent number 176,465, and telephone are in the style of the lettering on the original patent. Design 3 depicts the original telephone invented by Alexander Graham Bell and its descendant, a modern cell phone sending out a signal that can connect users across the world. Design 4 represents the connection between people created by this invention. Today, instant communication, access to information, and many forms of entertainment are literally at your fingertips, depicted by four hands reaching toward each other. The background of the design depicts both the early mode of transmission through wires and today's wireless networks. The second theme for Massachusetts is basketball. In Springfield, Massachusetts, in 1891, Dr. James Naismith created the game of basketball using two peach baskets and a soccer ball. The sport required little equipment and was relatively easy to learn, so it quickly spread as the YMCA and the American Red Cross organized basketball games for off-duty and convalescing troops during World War I. Design 5 depicts the hands of a basketball player taking a shot from the foul line. 6 depicts a view of the basket from overhead as a player dunks the ball. Design 7 depicts a large basketball with the silhouettes of four basketball players, two men and two women in action. One has just shot the basket toward the net, two are attempting to block the ball, and one is running toward the action. Below, three spectators view the game and excitedly gesture during the tense moment, with one clapping and one raising a fist in hope. Design 8 depicts a basketball that has just gone through the hoop at a low angle and is ricocheting in the net a moment before it falls. The way the net is stretched by the ball's energy suggests movement and action, two important characteristics of the sport. Design 9 depicts an overhead view of the basketball as it goes through the hoop into the net. 10 depicts elements from an early game of basketball, a peach basket attached to a balcony and a soccer ball sailing into the basket. Inscriptions are invention of basketball in 1891. 11 depicts elements from an early game of basketball, a peach basket and a soccer ball. 12 and 13 depict equipment used for the first basketball game. Designs 12 and 13 depict a peach basket and a soccer ball. Design 12 also features a pair of early sports shoes. This is 12 and 13. And finally, design 14 depicts a slam dunk, one of the most exciting plays in basketball. The 20 on the player's jersey represents the coin's year of issuance, and the 13 stripes on the soles of each of the shoes represent the American roots of the game. Mr. Chairman, that concludes Massachusetts.
Okay, thank you very much, April. Now, are there any questions regarding any technical points before we begin general discussion? Okay. So we'll start out here on our general discussion. Michael, would you kick it off?
Thank you, Tom. I, for one, and I know we talked about it, I disregarded the basketball theme. We've already covered that into the Hall of Fame, and as a result, I chose to focus on the telephone theme. I like the first two. I think the second two are a bit busy in terms of negative space. The second one appeals to me. I like the use of the font that replicated the original patent application, but I also think the first one is kind of kitschy, what do you want to say? That's a rotary dial. This generation doesn't even know what the hell a rotary dial is. So... those are my comments, Tom.
Okay, thank you, Michael. Dean. Still with us there, Dean?
Struggling for his mute button.
Okay, well, we're waiting for Dean. How about Eric? Why don't we kick off?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. I personally favor the telephonic idea. Here, and again, Design number one, I love the rotary phone. The trouble is most people won't know what it is. So I struggled with the four choices reduced to three. And honestly, the thought that's lingered with me was an afterthought from my original evaluation here. And that is looking at design number four, which looks too doggone busy until one can perhaps look at the radiant pattern coming off the antenna, really degrade that to such a soft part of the sculpt that it almost creates negative space. If that accommodation can be made, I actually like this design, really, because it's an eye catcher. Mm-hmm. And I think it teleports, to use a bad metaphor, the observer from the telephone to the impact that communications have had, if I dare lunge all the way forward to social media. So I think it's a very rich, innovative design. But I think the key to this, the absolute key to this, is this needs to be sculpted down so that it is, in fact, four touches and not the busyness that it is in this drawing. If I had to make a recommendation in basketball, practically speaking, I think design seven probably produces the best coin, merely because of its creative use of negative space to become the actual message. It has all kinds of incorrect elements of composition. You never have men blocking women. But I think it would sculpt to a very interesting coin given the size of the palette, and only because I liked it the first time, and I think it makes a really fun design. Number 14 is pretty doggone fun, and in the proof rendition, I think we could do some really fun things with texturing those stars and stripes on the bottom of the feet. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Mary.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to make an impassioned plea for number one. I don't think that we're all too old or too young to remember what a telephone rotary dial looks like. I think it's incredibly graphically interesting, and it unites generations from the cell phone back to not that many years ago when we all used a rotary dial. As mentioned before by Mike, we've gone through the basketball portfolio, but I would like to commend the artist. There's a lot of incredibly good designs in there. In particular, I like the one that Eric likes, number seven. I also like number five as something very clean. And the dynamism of number 14, I think, would sculpt very well. But I'm going to throw my votes toward the old-fashioned rotary dial because I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to have a lot of texture to it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Dean, are you back with us there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Very good. Go ahead.
Okay. For the reasons Mike stated, I'm going to just disregard basketball because, again, we've gone over that. And like Mary, I am very drawn to number one. I think the vast majority of Americans, are going to have some familiarity with the rotary telephone, and those that don't, this is going to be an interesting educational experience. I mean, it will foster some conversation between parents and their children and grandparents and their grandchildren. I wasn't as impressed with number two. I didn't see the reason why we needed to have the patent number, and I thought that was going, I like retro, but I thought that was going way too far back. It's okay. I think with three and four, I don't know if anybody else feels the way I felt, but I really was unable to see in number three that as a cell phone. I thought that it's really the way it was drawn, and the way I'm looking at it, it almost looked like it might be like a tablet or an iPad or something like that. And so you're left without a kind of middling representation of the telephone, maybe in its what might be, looking back, its middle years, and that's design number one that would be accessible to the widest group of people. I think number one has the cleanest, clearest design. And again, I think with number four, it's just too abstract and requires too much explanatory material to really make a lot of sense to the average person. So those are my comments.
Thank you very much, Dean.
Robert.
I, too, would disqualify selecting the basketball theme issues because of the what we've already done. But I would like to comment that these designs, in some respects, I felt were even better as a portfolio than the ones we were presented with for the Hall of Fame. Number one doesn't say a whole lot to me. I mean, yes, I recognize the rotary dial, and it says telephone. But this doesn't really convey a sense of innovation or history the way the other designs might. Number two, I felt, is just a little bit too retro to represent the idea of innovation, having the patent and this, the 1870s font. Number three is my favorite of these, but I have a possible issue. Is there any consideration or difficulty with the selection of the particular smartphone or iPhone? I mean, it may be a pad, but whatever, that still can be used as a telephone. But is this a particular brand or mark that we need to be considering or worrying about?
That's an excellent question. This is a generic phone. The artist looked at a bunch of the different brands, and this is what they came up with, which I think just tells us that they all really do look the same. But this is not... I think you might look at it and say, this is an Apple, this is an iPhone, but it's not. They all look the same.
Okay. They all look the same to me, too.
Yeah.
The rays, I think, are coming out from this thing are not quite as effective as the circular designs on number four. But this is something I would leave to an artist's selection. I felt the number four is just a little bit too confused. I mean, all the fingers pointing. We talk about finger pointing these days, but... This kind of loses the message of the telephone, as far as I'm concerned. So my selection would be for number three.
Thank you, Robert. Sam.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I too focused entirely on the telephone, and it is truly a wonderful, wonderful innovation. I like Mary's idea on the number one. It takes me back, and it's fun. And there's no question what it is, because it says telephone right there, so you can't miss it. I like number two as well in the history. It depicts the history of it. But my preference is number one.
Thank you, Sam. Rob?
I also discounted the basketball designs, although I do like number eight. The net and the ball going through, and do agree that these designs, I think, are better than the original portfolio that we had. But the rotary dial had me at the very beginning, and I am going to throw my vote in that direction for all of the reasons that everyone has already stated.
Thank you, Ron. Donald.
So I guess I have a problem with the telephone ones, because that's New Jersey's thing.
This is the appropriate accent.
And since I'm from New Jersey, I'm protecting New Jersey. That's New Jersey's thing. Where does Massachusetts come off doing that, right?
Does New Jersey have something else?
So I have a problem with that. But you know, if I were to go with the phone, even though obviously I think the best comment is actually the right comment, which is number one is fun. I mean, it's fun. I mean, it's not historically accurate. Nope. You know, and it's certainly not the invention. I mean, because they didn't, when they invented the telephone, that wasn't part of the invention, the rotary dial. You didn't need a rotary dial. There were two people when they invented it. One was here and one was there. You didn't need a rotary dial. It didn't come into being until later in the telephone, But You know, when you look at those, 18th century tokens, that have sundials on them and clocks on them, you know, they always sell for premiums. You know, they're always popular. You know why? Because they're fun. I mean, they're just fun. So we don't have to be historically, we don't have to be historical all the time. We this is a series that, is innovations, and we could just be fun if we want to be fun. And that's fun. We've never done that before. That's different. It's interesting. In fact, I don't think there's even a medal that I recall that depicts that. I could be wrong, but I don't think there's a medal that I've seen that depicts
there's
that.
There's an Israeli telephone token from the 1980s or so. and if you look at enough accumulations of just common, everyday things that people use, tokens, mm-hmm. You'll often see them, and they're tiny, and they're notched, and they're a bit thicker than a normal token, but they have a rotary dial. And whenever I would see one in a collection, they're not really worth anything, but I would set it aside because they're neat to look at.
Fun. Yeah. So I guess if I were to relent on it, I'd go there. And for the same reason, for the basketball coin, picking a basketball coin, we've seen a lot of these before, and in variations on this theme. Number 8 is probably the one to go with on the basketball coin, for the same reason that I would go for number 1. Now, here's my pitch on why the basketball coin, because I think it is the 2020 commemorative.
Yes.
Is the basketball commemorative?
That's correct.
So it might be, it might present a marketing opportunity if we went with basketball for Massachusetts. So not just because I don't think Massachusetts should have the telephone, because it belongs to New Jersey, and because 9,280-some-odd people would be pissed, to lose the telephone. But because if we're going to do the basketball commemoratives, and I heard some people say that's why you discounted it, because we kind of looked at that, And I wouldn't discount it because you looked at it. I would say, yeah, it's the year of basketball. We're going to be marketing the heck out of basketball. So, that could make, you could probably do something with this coin and the basketball commemorative and tie it all together somehow, and they could probably, do some marketing thing with that. And they're going to spend money on marketing basketball anyway. And the basketball people are going to be out in full force, for basketball. So, this takes a series that's otherwise, not exciting because it doesn't circulate, and creates an exciting component at an exciting time when we're promoting basketball. So that would be my argument that would be my secondary argument for going with basketball, and for picking item 8, because I think you just there too. I mean, if we're going to do basketball, we don't need to do the nerd thing. We don't need to do 10 through 13. And the guy jumping through the hoop, is kind of like reminiscent of what is in the commemorative. So this is just fun. So MA8 is where I would go. That's where I'm going to vote.
Thank you, Don. And some very good points there. I think that Dennis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Donald. I think that the basketball designs don't need to be automatically discounted. There could be a lot of energy around basketball that year, and this would add to that. I think, though, that the basketball designs have been chosen by the Secretary of the Treasury, and they don't include any of these. Is that correct?
That's correct. There are some of the designs that you're seeing today that were in that original portfolio, but none of those which were selected by the Secretary and unveiled September 6 are here.
but there are ones that you did see and like very much in that portfolio, which is why we brought them back here.
I like number 14 for the basketball design. I like the energy of number 8 as well. However, I would point out that basketball is important. It's an American innovation, certainly, but I think you could live your life beyond your school days without ever thinking about or watching a basketball game. The telephone is very different. Everyone uses a telephone. That is a truly universal innovation today. Something else I wanted to bring up is I think we need to consider our audience for these coins. These dollars will not be as broadly accessible as educational tools as the circulating quarter dollars were. So school kids are not going to be finding these in their pocket change and having conversations about them and collecting their favorites in the way they would have with the state quarters. These are going to have to be sought deliberately by collectors in the vast majority of cases, rather than showing up in pocket change. That's something to consider. You know, so if we worry too much about our audience not knowing what a rotary dial is, I think we're off track a bit, because our audience is going to be a bit older. These are going to be established active coin collectors who are just an older demographic. So I think that MA1 is an elegant design. It's universally recognizable to our audience. And even without the inscription telephone, which is helpful, even without that, it's something that you can immediately interpret. So I really like number 1. 14, again, on the basketball side, it's dynamic. It's a unique perspective. It was a strong contender in our conversations around the Basketball Hall of Fame review, but I really strongly prefer number 1 for the telephone.
Thank you, Dennis. Originally, first of all, let me make a comment on New Jersey and the telephone. Don, I think that was the Dixie cup with the wire, you know, the string, you know. Wait, well, there goes the New Jersey state for me, doesn't it? Yeah, there you go. There you go. You know, I originally did discount.
Incorrect.
What's that?
This is incorrect. New Jersey did it, not Massachusetts.
Okay, we'll have to deal with maybe. But I did discount basketball originally, but some of the comments as far as marketing goes, it might be a good idea. I would encourage everyone to vote according to their thoughts. But I do go to number 1 in the telephone. I think that it would be a good conversation piece as well, and I think that people could relate to that, even though it might not be historically. But I think you need to go to the governor's office and say, hey, since when? but that's your challenge, Don. But I do think that I do like the fingers and the pointing and the circles. I think that was very clever. But once again, I think that it's been brought out that it would be difficult to interpret. But I think that the artist has done a really interesting job of creating a thought here. So I commend that. Before we vote, Joe, would you like to make any comment? Yep, Jeannie? Hold on, Joe. Jeannie? Yes. Yes.
Hello?
You're here. Oh, you were the first one. I was supposed to start with you.
Well, thank you for recognizing me.
I was too much into the New Jersey telephone.
I know you're all welcome from Jersey, as you are.
You're sitting next door.
I do agree with Donald about New Jersey perhaps being the forerunner of the telephone.
However, I'm going to speak to number one because it is a fun thing. So if we're going to go with the telephone, even though I give accolades to the artist for number four, as I looked at this image, I love the fact that it was all ages were included in these hands. Youth, child, old person, elderly. So congratulations on including all of humanity in that. But I want to go back to the basketball. I think that Massachusetts is no doubt that Massachusetts was the forerunner and the innovator of basketball. So with that in mind, I am looking again, as I did the last time, at number seven, which I think would coin up lovely. And also number 14. I just love this piece. I love the dynamics of it. I love the imagery that, you know, we have here with number 20 on his shirt and the stars on his soul. So this those three are my choices today. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yep.
Thank you, Jay.
Mr. Chairman, I almost wish we could, like, you know, because four, you know, seven is nice too, and I almost wish we could say, you know, for the first vote, basketball or telephone, and then go from there. You know, because I could easily go with seven too. I like eight simply because I could just see the director, if he's going to colorize coins in the commemorative basketball, if that ultimately happens, I could easily see a set that includes a colorized version of this in that set, that's only available in that set, and that would be pretty cool, and I could just hear him, like, say that, really. So, just throw that out there.
Okay, Don, thanks. And if you look at number seven, if you recall, this is like a reverse proof of the design we actually selected. So, in some degree there. So, if you are going to give some votes and thoughts to the basketball, I agree. But I kind of lean more towards the motion if we're looking at it. And the thing that's really enticed me on it is the fact that a possible marketing opportunity that was brought up. I think that's, I know Sam brought it up in the last discussion regarding how we can be marketable and help both efforts. And if that's the case, then I think a compliment, since we already have a basketball going through a hoop that could be colorized, and we actually have number seven in the design factor of the original commemorative, then I would lean towards something totally different, more like 14, that would engage the motion and a person, you know, physically there. So if you do decide to vote and go that way, give that some consideration from the marketing standpoint. Joe, final comments?
Yes, sir. I mean, I only see one design that I only see one design that I think is really awesome, and that's MA808. If you look at the ball, it's perfectly centered within the coin, and yet it has a vigorous dynamic thrust to the right with the addition of the net. This coin is both static and in motion at the same time, and it has such a profound sense of motion, something unlike I've seen on a U.S. coin in a mighty long time, that I think the movement, which is like the same thing as gesture in sculpture, is something very important, and I think it's just quite beautiful. If I was going to go for the telephone theme, being from New Jersey, I would also go with the MA01.
Okay, thank you. And Greg will now pass out the. Is there any further discussion? If not, go ahead, Dennis.
I do have a question for Joe.
Yeah, sure.
Do you think, given the small canvas that you'd be working on, that there are any particular challenges with number one, with the numerals and the letters?
These designs have already been vetted by our product design specialists who check things for coinability. They have templates for numbers and letter scales, and it should all be okay. And if not, we would adjust it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Gotcha. And as a point of clarification, we had the unveiling of the New Jersey dollar, and that was the light bulb, which, you know, we did the light bulb for New Jersey, but the work on the telephone was actually done in Massachusetts. So it was, just a point of clarification for those of you now voting.
That's brutal.
It might be like assembled in China or something. I don't know.
Ouch. Oh. Ouch.
Feel free to move about for the next 5-10 minutes if you'd like.
So we're at 10 minutes.
Okay, welcome back, everyone, and we will now turn to April. In this office, the development management presents the reverse candidate design for the Maryland 2020 American Innovation $1.
Thank you. And the first design theme is the Hubble Space Telescope. Managed by teams at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center and the Space Telescope Science Institute, both located in Maryland, the Hubble Space Telescope is one of the largest and most versatile space telescopes. Data transmitted by Hubble has helped refine estimates of the age of the universe, trace the growth of galaxies, identify planets beyond our solar system, study the planets within our solar system, identify black holes, observe the birth and death of stars, and many other scientific discoveries. So design 1, 2, and 3 depict the Hubble Space Telescope observing the universe. Additional inscriptions on design 1 and 3 are Hubble Space Telescope. This is design 1, 2, and 3. Designs 4 and 4A depict close-up views of the Hubble Space Telescope orbiting the Earth. Design 4, shown here, features the additional inscription Hubble Space Telescope. And 4A, Design 5 depicts the Hubble Space Telescope orbiting the Earth, surrounded by a field of stars. The additional inscription is the Hubble Space Telescope. The next design theme is the Human Genome Project. From 1990 to 2003, the Human Genome Project, a project from the Department of Energy and the National Institute of Health, worked to identify all of the genes in human DNA and determined the sequences of the chemical base pairs making up human DNA. The data from this project is free to anyone with internet access and has benefits to many fields, including medicine, agriculture, forensics, and bioarchaeology. Design 6 and 7 depict a figure in the style of Da Vinci's Vitruvian Man, a common symbol of humanity. Across the figure is a chromosome, representing the mission of the Human Genome Project. Additional inscriptions are Mapping the Human Genome and Mapping Human Genome, as seen on Design 6 and 7. Design 8 uses the background of Da Vinci's Vitruvian Man, with the chromosomes replacing the figure within the geometric shapes, representing the Human Genome Project. The chromosome breaks free from the boundaries, symbolizing the unlimited possibilities for the use of the information from the project. The additional inscriptions are NIH and Mapping Human Genome. Design 9 depicts a chromosome with a key and a keyhole, symbolizing the mission of the Human Genome Project, to identify, map, and unlock the human genome. The additional inscription is Mapping Human Genome. Design 10 depicts DNA bent in a curve with the Y in the inscription Maryland turning into a human chromosome. Design 11 depicts two DNA strands encircling the composition and overlapping an atom. The additional inscription is the Human Genome Project. Design 12 depicts an image of the Earth with a simplified strand of DNA and the additional inscription mapping the human genome. 13 features a strand of DNA with wings folded behind as a play on the caduceus, often used as a symbol of medicine. The additional inscription reads the Human Genome Project. Design 14 features a pattern based on the first 15 human chromosomes. Surrounding the design are the numbers 1 through 23, representing the 23 chromosomes. And finally, design 15 depicts a diagram of a DNA double helix formed by base pairs, one of which is about to be paired together. The additional inscription is mapping the human genome.
Thank you, April. Before we begin again our general discussion, are there any technical questions from the committee about any of the designs? Seeing none, let's discuss our considerations. Mm-hmm. And Jeannie, would you kick us off?
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a hard time, I think, with this portfolio because there was just a lot of complexity in the drawings. And I have to... Some of them are very intriguing. I'm looking at number 11 for the human genome because I think, in my opinion, it becomes abstract, but it also tells us what Marilyn was about. So that would be my choice for that theme. I think that also number 7 could be sort of a fun piece. However, number 5 for the theme of the telescope, the Hubble Space Telescope, I think would be nice, sculpted, and I love the star element, and also the acknowledgement that NASA is on this telescope. Is this correct? NASA belongs. The letters NASA are supposed to be on that telescope. Anybody? Historian, Dean, you out there? That's the only question I have about that, but I do like number 5. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeannie. Dennis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I love the dichotomy within this portfolio. We have one set of designs that look microscopically inside us, and then another that looks way outside into the universe. So I really enjoyed this this portfolio. Of the two, I found myself kind of leaning towards the idea of looking out. I think people look in quite a bit. The significance of the Hubble Space Telescope is incredible. It can't be it cannot be overemphasized. I also liked number 5 for its innovative use of typography. This typography has never been used on a United States coin before. It has the helpful legend that I talked about earlier in case someone does need some context. It tells them that this is the Hubble Space Telescope. And I also like the fact that NASA is called out specifically. For the human genome, but so just to affirm that, number 5 is my strong preference for this statement. For the Human Genome Project, I liked number 13. The wings, although they're not human, obviously, they're avian, wings evoke flight. They evoke hope and freedom, the freedom that comes from self-knowledge and knowledge in general. And I thought that this was just the most artful of the designs for the Human Genome Project. But again, my strong preferences for the Hubble Space Telescope as a concept, and number five for the design. Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis. Michael.
Tom, I was really hoping you'd put me last so I could listen to everybody else.
I can do that.
No, you didn't.
I can.
No.
All right, you're going to still hang in there? All right.
Well, for the Hubble, I actually like number one. I like the field being reasonably simple. But I can see why people are gravitating toward number five. When you go over to the human genome, seven had some potential. But I don't like the void there in the center. I think it loses in terms of the design, and your eye is picking at it, even though it shouldn't. As a result, I can't go there. Number 10, the human chromosome, I don't think will show up. I think it'll get lost. It's just a little bit too cute. But again, you've got the negative space there. The one that I like, I think, probably is number 15. Not artistic, but it's simple. And clean fields.
Thank you, Michael. Dean?
To answer Gene's question, first off, I'm really not a specialist in the history of space, technology, things along those lines. But the images that I saw online had NASA on number five, and on the Hubble Space Telescope, and number five is my choice. I was very, very drawn to this. I think it's very simple. It's very elegant. I like the lettering that is used with NASA and reflected in Maryland. Number one just didn't inspire me, and numbers two through four A, so two, three, excuse me, four and four A, just struck me as variations on it. Theme, and the theme just again I found uninspiring. I thought number two looked like it was some sort of an attack by some sort of space insect on some smaller objects or beings, and maybe that shows motion. But I like number five. I like the elegance. For the human genome, again, I agree with a lot of the discussion that's gone by a little bit earlier. I guess by default, I'm drawn to number seven, and that's really almost it. I can see something with number nine, this idea of unlocking, but I think that design is pretty simple, and it makes its point in something of a heavy-handed way. I might be willing to give some points to number 15, but those are my comments, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Dean, thank you. Eric?
Thank you, Tom. I was really gratified that we're choosing between two incredibly important innovations to mankind here. And that's not to decimate New Jersey or anything that might happen in New Jersey, but between Hubble and the genome, I think these are the kind of innovations that the entire series was designed to precipitate. So that makes it a difficult challenge. And so I will encourage everyone on the committee to really do an effort to give us a preferential for the Hubble and a preference for the genome so that this committee does not make the decision as to which of the innovations is important, but in fact gives the upstream decision makers our best cut, whichever way they go. In terms of the artwork, on the Hubble, I think design number five is kind of the default best choice. It has no energy to it. I do like the font set that is. If it isn't NASA's font set, it's pretty darn close to it, and only because the mid cares about copyright and things, that might be something you might want to be careful about. And I don't know what the open status of font sets are, but be careful on that. And I don't think there are advertisements in space on the Hubble, so I'm not aware that NASA's on the telescope itself. That's not a killer defect to me. I think if we go with five to the sculptors, the Hubble telescope is really not about a telescope. It's really about the stars. And so I would hate to think that the stars would decimate in this gulf. But at the same time, I don't want the stars to turn into the staroids of design MD1 and 2. I think those are detracting details. That it's kind of like the days we asked Don Eberhardt, can you sculpt fireworks? Can you sculpt a volcano? And he said, yeah, we can. And if you look back at those quarters, he did them. They were kind of, well, wow, did you really get that done right? So the stars are going to be a challenging sculpt here, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Right then.
I still feel the fireworks.
I
sculpted the fireworks.
Well, they were tough, I think.
No, I would defer to your opinion and acumen and judgment. I think I won't comment on either version as a preference. I would just say that we can sculpt either version equally well.
Well, I would just say that I don't know how many stars there are here, whether there's 50 or 48 or...
But I would interrupt you and also add that, just like I said about the text, these have already been vetted by our coinability specialists, and they're coinable.
Well, here comes the challenge.
Yes, sir.
Every star is different.
Well, this, I think this artist did, well, he or she did it deliberately.
When it comes to the genome, I was really drawn to design number 7 with the Vitruvian Man and the reasonably correct artistic representation of the helix. Michael, would you feel differently about this if the Vitruvian Man diagram was not totally occluded by what is a see-through rendition of the...
No, no.
Okay.
It would have been my favorite.
With that, it would be your favorite. And with that adoption, it becomes my hands down favorite as well. When I look at, and it's not because they're all on the second page, but 9 through 15... Every one of those has a confusing artistic element, a wrong or disturbing aesthetic, or is buried in so much subtlety that it's going to get lost in a small palette. Number 9 looks to me like that's a collage as opposed to an artistic rendering here. 10 and 11 and 12, the spiral looks more like parts of a suspension bridge to me. And so they kind of violate the normal, I see it, I get it, symbolic power of the DNA spiral. 13 just caught me by surprise. I think the text is a little small on the perimeter, but it caught me by surprise and really just doesn't make me click. 14, unless you know what a gas chromatograph is, you probably don't know what that is. Or perhaps that isn't even chromatography. Maybe that's actually the genetic representation, but I think it deviates from what people are going to understand. And 15 just doesn't come across to me as the genetic twisted pair. So I go back to 7 and I go, with the Vitruvian Man sculpted subtly and not with sharp edges, but with a bright, high relief spiral across it, I think that is the killer message of mankind finding itself in itself. Thank you.
Let's go to Robert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's really interesting, I think, that we have this view of microscopic things. I mean, who has ever even seen a genome? Nobody. But we see here the famous double helix represented as though it might be some kind of bizarre roller coaster ride. We also see the components of the genetic intervals and the different tentacles. I like the wings of the caduceus. But I think I would lean much more toward the Hubble telescope as a design that would be appropriate for this issue. Number 1, I think, is quite appealing, showing the whole image of the telescope, but I have a little bit of a problem with the stars. These are what I call the telstars. And I would prefer design if these things were a little smaller and if there were 13, as there is on number two.
Number two, three, four, and 4A, all to me are a little bit confused because of the truncation of the telescope. Number five I like because you really get an impression that the telescope is looking outward into space from the Earth. And the fact that it includes Maryland, that kind of ties it correctly to the state. But speaking of the state, both of these projects, the genome and the Hubble telescope, are, to me, more national or federal projects than they are connected with the state of Maryland. So I'm not sure why exactly Maryland has selected these as representatives of their state, just as I had a problem with Massachusetts, for instance, why they wanted to select those designs. I like the double helix. I like the genome things. And I agree that these are very important innovations that are worthy of being represented. It's a little difficult to decide. My preferences are probably for number one and or number five, although I can see the possibility of the other ones, too. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. And if the telescope is chosen, I would entertain... I'd like to entertain a motion for the stars. I think it's a good idea. Donald.
As much as I like space things on coins, and we don't do enough of that, so the space thing on the coin would be nice. The Hubble telescope, I mean, I'm surprised Maryland wants this because the Hubble telescope failed, and it didn't work for like the first 18 months. So why they're commemorating something that didn't work, I don't understand.
What's working
now?
But
that was a New Jersey subcontractor.
Well, maybe. Well, you can't see the stars in New Jersey, so you don't worry about. We don't worry about. Why might that be? We can't take credit. We can't take credit for this. You know, I just have a hard time, commemorating. Something that's broken. I mean, at its outset, but
it got fixed.
Yeah, it cost after massive cost overruns and it got fixed.
Probably didn't come from New Jersey.
No, it didn't. It came from Maryland. a Democratic state, but it came from Maryland. I'm more inclined to go with. The genome, and I think it's certainly more, in so many ways more significant, than the Hubble. I wish we had, some other designs, but I think what we have is really fine. I've heard some preferences for number 15, and that perfectly illustrates. The theme and it's graphic. It does what I'm looking for it to do. I actually think 14 is very cool. No one will know what that is, and that's probably why no one's supporting it because no one's going to know what that is. But it is cool. I think 13, I think the wings are actually something out of that TV series Lucifer. They're angel wings. Lucifer. It's a TV series. He comes to Earth. The devil comes to Earth, and he becomes like a police detective, and he burns his wings up, right? But somebody steals his wings and sells them at auction. So,
more valuable information.
He's not from New Jersey. He's from L.A. I also like number 10. As a design, I think number 7. What I'm hearing from people, it's just my problem with number 7 is, how many times are we going to do this Da Vinci thing? It's been done. It's almost been done to the point of being trite. It was done on an Austrian coin not too long ago. I think that was a coin of the year coin.
Yeah,
actually,
was, yeah.
The Vitruvian Man. It was a Nobium, the Nobi, one of the Nobium,
yeah,
25
exactly.
euros.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, you see the image all the time. You know, so how many times are we going to see the image? I mean, I just don't. I just for that reason, I wouldn't support number 7. It's just trite. Number 15 is something we've seen. So, you know, my feeling would be to go with 16 because I know I wouldn't get support for 14, and I don't think anybody would understand 14, and no one has talked about number 10. So, I would probably go with 15, and I would stay away from the Hubble as much as I would like a space theme on a coin.
Thank you, Donald. Sam.
Thank you, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This was a tough choice because these two innovations are truly, truly, truly historic, and they affect virtually everybody on the planet in one way, shape, or form. In terms of the Hubble, I liked design number 5 because I liked the NASA inscription on there, and I also just like the stars, and it was just looks like it would be a very pretty coin. The Human Genome Project, it's tougher to choose. I actually looked at number 12, even though it looks like a suspension bridge. I think Eric said that. The reason is because it crosses the world, and this innovation, and that's the reason why. And I thought the symmetry would work on that coin, but I don't have a strong preference. I think the Hubble, if you're looking for sales, it's a pretty cool thing for kids. Telescope part of it, but anyway, they're both are equally good.
Thank you, Sam. Robin.
With the Hubble Space Telescope, I initially liked number 3, and it's no one's talked about it. The detail of the telescope hovering over the world, the interesting way that the lettering is displayed caught my eye initially. I think, though, after hearing everybody talk, that more appropriate would be the number 5 with the full telescope, and I was drawn to the lettering. The particular font here is beautiful and appropriate. The stars, I think, can be sculpted in such a way that they will really stand out. With the human genome, I will talk about number 14. That was my choice. And I guess because it is different, it's what it reminded me of initially is a painting by somewhat like in the style of Mondrian. And if people don't know what this is, then it gives us a perfect opportunity for education. And I think that's an important collateral that goes along with all of this. I think collectors will also look at it and say, what is that? And be intrigued. So I liked that number 14 very much. And then my second choice is number 15. The simplicity is there. There's action. Tells the story. And I think it could make a very nice design as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. And Mary.
Okay. Of the two topics for Maryland, our two choices, much as I like number 5 for the Hubble telescope for all the reasons that have been enumerated, I think that we need to go with the Human Genome Project. Then it gets kind of difficult. The logo of the National Institute of Health is the Vitruvian Man, which is pictured in number 7, but only partially pictured. Leonardo da Vinci died 500 years ago, and he was arguably one of the most brilliant people on the planet, and I don't think that reusing the Vitruvian Man is trite at all. So I do want to, you know, put in a vote for MD number 7. Additionally, I liked number 10, but there was nothing that said mapping the human genome project. So that kind of left the interesting use of the genome for Y unexplained to the general public. I'm glad Robin talked about number 14. Initially, that was really one of my favorites. But again, the same issue. We don't see mapping the human genome anywhere. And, you know, how many of us have signed up for, like, Ancestry.com or 23andMe? I mean, this is all of this stuff. So kind of by default, MD-15, which has mapping the human genome written on it, shows part of the double helix and is a very clean graphic. I think I'm going to support that for my choice. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mary. As far as my thoughts go, also, as Robin had mentioned, number 3 there, I did like the how the wording did come around. It kind of has the motion. The problem here is the panel, I think. I think the panel's just overwhelming the telescope itself. So I like what the artist has done there. And I also like the fact that the there's more definition of the Earth as compared to number 5. But I'm going to have to go with number 5, and it'd be nice if we had some more definition of the Earth. That looks more like the Moon to me than it does otherwise, but I think the definition could be enhanced through the process. As far as human genome goes, I'm leaning towards number 15, and I understand on number 14 how creative it could be and some thought process could be there. Once again, these are dollars, so how many are going to really, you know, it's not like the quarters, so I kind of would lean, if I'm doing the genome, to go with 15 or 12. So with that, I'd like to have Greg Wyman pass out our judging sheets, and we'll go from there.
Do you want to get Joe's comments?
Oh, I thought he had already made a few earlier, but go ahead.
No, I don't have a preference in either group, but I defer to the committee's judgment.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. Sure.
Get to it easy.
Yes. turn to April Stafford, Chief of the Mint's Office of Design Management, to present the reverse candidate designs for the South Carolina 2020 American Innovation $1 point. April?
Thank you. The first theme is Septima Clark. During the Civil Rights Movement, Septima Poinsettia Clark pioneered the link between education and political organizing. She helped establish the first citizenship schools, teaching literacy and citizenship rights and helping establish local leaders for the Civil Rights Movement. Teaching people how to read and understand the Constitution helped African American citizens pass the literacy tests used to disenfranchise these voters. Clark believed knowledge could empower marginalized groups in ways that formal legal equality couldn't. I should note that this is the governor's office's preferred theme. So we'll start with design one. This design features Septima Clark teaching at a blackboard, rendered as the U.S. Constitution, representing the concept of citizenship schools that helped African Americans learn to read and to understand the Constitution. The additional inscriptions are Septima Clark and citizenship schools. Design two depicts Septima Clark marching with three young African American students who carry books and an American flag, representing the education and literacy among oppressed people is necessary for empowerment and enjoyment of civil rights. The additional inscription is Septima Clark. I'd note that this theme, is the preference of the South Carolina Governor's Office. Both. The theme is their preference, and of the theme offering, is this design. Yes, sir.
And this is the first time we've had
Correct.
A preference.
Oh. Yes.
Oh, thank God.
And we have design three, which depicts Septima Clark looking on as an adult student learns to read. The additional inscriptions are Septima Clark and Mother of the Movement. Moving on to the next theme for South Carolina, the Mazer. Charles Hard Towns, PhD, received the Nobel Prize for his role in the invention of the Mazer, microwave amplification by stimulated emission of radiation. The Mazer utilized a new way to create intense, precise beams of coherent radiation. Mazers are currently used as the timekeeping devices in atomic clocks and as low-noise microwave amplifiers in radio telescopes and deep space spacecraft communication. Design 4 depicts a scientist holding a model of an electromagnetic field, the organizing principle of science behind the Mazer. Lines in the background represent the beams of microwave energy being projected through space. Designs 5, 5A, 6, and 6A depict the hands of a scientist symbolically controlling and magnifying beams of energy by manipulating electrically charged fields. The additional inscription is Mazer. This is Design 5 and Design 5A. In Design 6 and 6A, the lines in the background represent the beams of microwave energy being projected through space. This is 6 and 6A. Design 7 depicts TESS, the Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite, orbiting Earth with South Carolina emphasized in North America. Town's invention of the Mazer led to the development of atomic clocks and lasers, which led to the development of satellites. The negative space in the composition references the crescent moon shape on the South Carolina's state flag. The 8 stars indicate South Carolina's order of entry into the Union. The additional inscription is Mazer. 8 depicts a symbolic representation of the Mazer's use in an atomic clock. 9 depicts a simplified equation describing the workings of a Mazer. An elemental gas is stimulated by the addition of photons that forces it from energy level 1 to energy level 2. The natural response is a rebalancing from E2 back to E1. This oscillating cycle produces microwaves, represented by wavy lines at the top. A simplified low relief of the first Mazer device is depicted behind the equation. That concludes South Carolina's portfolio, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, April. Any technical questions before we begin our considerations? Okay, seeing none. Donald, why don't you kick it off?
Well, it's the first time we've had a you know, it's the first time we've had a recommendation coming out of the state. I wish it wasn't five figures on a small palette like that. I think it absolutely. Oh, I'm sorry. So, I'm very happy that this is the first, the first time today we've had a recommendation from the state. I wish it wasn't four figures on a small palette, on a small $1 size palette. I clearly, notwithstanding the merits of, the other designs, and there are merits on the other designs, which I'll certainly, check off the merit box on the form. I think the Septima Clark, I think one of the three designs, of Septima Clark is what we should really be talking about. And my feeling is if the state feels passionately enough to recommend, design two, I can't say that it won't work on the small coin. I mean, it wouldn't be what I would do. But I can't say that, I certainly can't say that one or three are any nicer in terms of artistic designs. So once I'm resigned to going with one, two, or three, in my mind, artistically, I can't tell you there's a difference in my, artistically. Doesn't make a difference to me which. And if the state wants number two, that's great that they made the recommendation, so be it.
Thank you, Gene.
Thanks, I have to agree with Donald. I think that since the governor likes number two, I would support that. If we look at Mather and all of those images related to it, unfortunately, I see the design element as a pumpkin. And I just can't get past the fact that it looks like a pumpkin. And I consequently have disregarded all of those. I don't care for, nine or eight. It's just very subjective. I'm sorry, Joe, I'm not very articulate about this except the pumpkin image. And I will have to go with number two. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeannie. Eric?
Thank you, Tom. I had a technical question for the legal people in the room, and excuse me if I'm asking a question that's been asked before. What are our restrictions and rules about profiles of people and innovators in particular?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Was there an exclusion? We cannot put in profiles. We cannot have a picture of the innovator.
No exclusion for a profile.
Okay, so
to avoid.
All right, so design four, for instance, is not a head and shoulders.
No.
It's
not an actual person. It's
just. Oh, okay. I didn't think it was Bill Nye, the science guy, but I thought it might be the innovator. No.
No.
Okay. There you go.
By the way, it's not an exact science, but by and large, when there is a hand or other body parts that are included, we've generally erred in the side of allowing it, especially when it's not this, it's not a central element. Right. You may remember this, right? And
granted,
the slavery program had a different language in the bill for the Native American dollar, but it's not only a head and shoulders portrait. There is, in fact, his hand, which is actually the central feature of the design.
So thank you, Jeannie, for encapsulating my inner pumpkin here, because I had the exact same confusion in that symbol, and so it didn't register well. We have a fascinating situation here where we're faced with a highly technical innovation and a highly political social innovation. And I don't know how to resolve that other than to encourage the committee's members to vote their best art in both of the options and make sure we preserve that decision for perhaps others beyond us, and not lock down a decision and end up with inferior art if they go against our innovation preference. Having said that, Design 1, I think, it's too busy, but maybe the sculptors can take the busyness away from us by preserving the background lettering from the famous document and creating negative-ish space there. I don't know, Joe, what are your thoughts there?
I'm sorry, I got distracted by an email from one of the...
That's all right.
Somebody in Philadelphia.
I'm really asking you to tell us how you would sculpt the document in the background here.
It would the way it's drawn, it looks like it's encused, but perhaps we would change that. Either way, it's a challenge with the draft. I think maybe this is a better question for my boss. Look at that.
Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure the room sees him as your boss. But,
he's my boss.
Artists must stand independently, Joe.
I think it's something we can represent in very low relief texture, and you'll be able to read like We the People and maybe Article 1, but the rest is going to be unreadable when it gets done.
My real question then, because I'm going to drive to the answer I'm looking for, does that end up looking like complexity or negative-ish space?
We may end up modeling it both ways and seeing which actually can.
Which way do you think you'd end up going?
I mean, you really put me on the spot.
Here. I am.
That's a lot to sculpt. But it's, got to keep it low so the draft doesn't get crazy.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's going to be more like, looking more like texture than relief. It's going to be maybe lasered on, I'm not sure at this point.
Okay.
But it's going to be more like patterning on the field than actually showing in any kind of relief.
Thank you. So based on all of that, I view in the cultural innovation, the social innovation dimension here, I actually like the potential artistic effect of one better than two. Three would not be my choice of SC 1, 2, and 3. I originally thought in SC3 that he was in a wheelchair until I looked very closely. And so I think we have a choice between one or two, depending on how you liked or didn't understand or come to grips with the discussion there on how the document in the background, critical to the, I think We the People is critical. I'm not sure the rest is. So switching over to the Mazur side, I want to thank Mary for encouraging me to reread, and thank the Mint for always including these artists' comments, because I reread the comments on number 7, and as she said to me, once you read that, you'll realize it's the only design here that makes any sense. And the danger is someone without having this text will go, wow, didn't we just do the Hubble? But this is an incredibly encoded, inclusive, symbolically of what the art is buried here for us to unpack. and turns the Maser, which is an incredibly sophisticated innovation, into how we're discovering planets that exist in the universe around us. So if we turn just one young mind from a questioner to a devotee of what makes their heart sing, and turn somebody into an astronomer that wasn't going to be one, but for our Maser rendition here, if that isn't a long idea, this is a great design. Coins up wonderfully, is incredibly meaningful if the Mint were to include some information about these designs in the annual set, perhaps. On 8 and 9, 8 is too much detail. It's kind of cool, but I don't think it will render up with a meaningful clock face, nuclear timekeeping. And number 9, I think it's just a little much. So I'm going to support 1 and 2 to preserve the committee's ability to put forth emphasis in that area. And I'm going to support Design 7 for the Maser. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Michael.
I looked through this portfolio the first time, I thought, oh, 7, the South Carolina Crescent. The committee's going to go head over heels for that thing. I'm not sure it conveys as much as I want it to. On the other hand, I like number 8, the atomic clock. But it needs to have Maser in there somewhere, because otherwise it's really not apparent what in the world is going on there. Well, let's get back to the first three, because I want to respect what the state has done here in terms of guidance. And Eric, I understand what you're trying to get at with number 1, because it does make sense if that were negative space and you just have we the people out there, and it would work. Number 3 doesn't convey what they're trying to do, which is the citizenship school. Let's look at number 2. 4 figures is 1 too many, for darn sure. It is their choice, but when you look at those 4 figures, the young woman on the right really doesn't add anything to the design. It's just a 4th figure. And if we were to go with number 2, I would suggest that you get the citizenship school in there in place of the 4th figure, and that gives you some additional negative space, particularly if you do it in Coos, which makes that's probably the most emblematic of what they're trying to do, which was to link education with advocacy for their civil rights. And I see why the state wants it. Thank you, Tom.
All right, Michael. Thank you, Sam.
thank you, Tom. Just to echo what Eric just said, I think we need to pay attention to the designs of all of them, and that's important. But just in terms of the state itself, I also understand why they want to go with number 2, and I have absolutely no problem with it. And I think that it will make a very pretty coin, and they should be proud of it. The Maser thing was complicated to me, and I didn't really know how you would depict that very well. And you have to make adjustments to the ones you might choose. The Crescent of South Carolina on number 7 was the nicest of all of them. And I did like the atomic clock, but it doesn't say anything. So that's it for me.
Thank you, Sam. Dennis.
Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chair. When we came in, we didn't know the governor's preference or the state's preference for these themes. I was actually very happy to learn that Septima Clark was their preference. Something we've talked about since the beginning of this program is that not every innovation has to be scientific, technological, mechanical, engineering, something that can be patented. something that can be invented or created in that sense. Innovations can be cultural, they can be spiritual, mental, or otherwise intangible. Martin Luther King called Septima Clark the mother of the movement, the mother of the civil rights movement. I like number one because I think it most clearly spells out what Septima Clark did. She was a teacher. She taught for action and for civil rights, but I think number two makes her look like a marcher for civil rights and a political activist in that sense. I like the way number one captures her essence as a teacher. I had the same questions and concerns in the back of my mind about the how the design of the text of the Constitution would be sculpted, but Joe has several times throughout the day reassured us that everything that we're being presented today is technically and artistically possible. So I'm confident now, especially after this more recent discussion, that we the people at least will be very legible and people will understand that they're looking at the Constitution. I like the helpful legends or helpful inscriptions, as I keep calling them, citizenship schools and her name, Septima Clark, will kind of broadcast to people who need that who she was and what she did. I would also point out that it looks like this, in 2019 we had a set of designs for these dollars where one was devoted to a person and three were devoted to inventions or more technical aspects of innovation. And it looks like we're moving into 2020. This would give us that same kind of approach where we have three that are technical or invention related and one that is devoted to a person rather than a thing. So I like that continuity as well and that development within the program. But I think that number one is a very strong design. I think it's a strong theme. And I'm glad that this was the governor's choice of theme. I think one is stronger than two, and that's what I would recommend.
Thank you very much, Dennis. Mary?
I would like to respect what the governor has chosen as a theme, and so I think that I'm going to restrict my choices to either one or two. One is difficult for me because it's just so incredibly busy. I like the fact that it has her name boldly, that it has citizenship schools so that people that don't know who Septima Clark was can kind of click on that, as it were. Number two, I don't want to do, you know, design by committee again, but I do like this design. I think it's really clean looking. If there was a way to remove the far right figure and then put citizenship schools under, you know, curved underneath Septima Clark's name, you know, that may solve a few problems. But I would like to talk a little bit about number seven, which was my favorite. The only part about this design that I felt was flawed was that major is a little too small. You don't know what that is. I'd like to see that brought up a little bit more. I would also want to make sure that South Carolina was clear on the map of the United States, and I was wondering what we would do to make South Carolina pop out of the map. I liked the fact that it mimicked the crescent moon, and I liked the fact that there are eight stars. I just thought that this is a really good design, and that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Dean?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me okay?
Very good, very good.
Okay, very good. Two changes in the writing of history and civil rights. There have been many changes, but I think the Septima Clark captures two very important historiographic changes. One is involving gender and new emphasis on the role of women in the civil rights movement. And the other is what historians like to call the long civil rights movement. Because Septima Clark was, I mean, when the civil rights movement was initially taught in school, when it was fresh history, a lot of people focused on the period 1954 to whatever, beginning with the Brown decision. But historians have been pushing that back and seeing the roots of the civil rights movement in the 30s, even earlier than that. So we're starting to speak more of a long civil rights movement. She fits into that very well. She was born in 1898. A lot of her activism was in the kind of classical period of 1954 onward, but she also was an activist earlier than that. I liked all of that. And I wrote design number one. When I was really, really collecting coins, I remember they did a bicentennial coin for the U.S. Constitution. And this has some similarities to that. And I think the reasons that a number of my colleagues have mentioned, you've got citizenship schools, you've got her name. As Mike and a few others said, with number two, I think if you did eliminate the fourth character, I think it's really important with citizenship schools there. So you know you're not just honoring the individual and their accomplishments, but something very specific that was innovative. And I'm not going to go into it, but I didn't care for number three. I think with Mazur, I really didn't know what to do with these. I think it was very, very hard for the artist to capture them. I'd like to say something about number seven that I don't think anybody has mentioned. The design, in terms of the way it, with the stars and so forth, reminds me a lot of the Annie Jump Cannon coin for Delaware. And I don't know whether how much we want to think about what we've recommended or what's been approved in the past, but it has a similar feel to that. I would imagine it's probably the same artist. I don't want to exclude similar works. Just earlier I'm talking about some works that I like that are similar and that you're including here. But that one, if anyone wants to allay my concerns about that, I think that's probably the best of the major ones, and that's the one that I'll give most of my points to.
Thank you, Dean.
Those are my comments.
Thank you very much. Robin?
Septima Clark is a very important person in South Carolina history and in the history of the civil rights movement overall. She does predate what we think of typically as the movement dates, 1954 forward. As a teacher, literacy was the cornerstone of her citizenship schools. And for that reason, I was drawn right off the bat to number one. It's been established that it is coinable. That was my initial concern, but it can work. And the citizenship schools does need to be there. All three of the designs related to Ms. Clark are good, but I think number one is the best. Regarding the Mazur, there's no question in my mind as a native South Carolinian that it's number seven. And I am going to point out, for the record, that it's not a crescent moon, that is a courgette. The South Carolina flag dates back to a flag used during the American Revolution. It's part of a military uniform. And no crescent moons here. But the history information within this design, I think, is very important. Aside from the Mazur itself, anything that casts South Carolina in a positive light, I'm for. And definitely bring out the state in the design. So number one and number seven are my choices.
Thank you. Thank you, Robin. Robert?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think there's really no question but that we should go with number two.
because this is, in fact, a positive selection, and it's a beautiful design. I agree with others, though, who have said that it probably should be best amplified by adding in something to the extent of mentioning the citizenship schools, and that could be effectively be put in by replacing the figure on the right with some wording. I like the fact in number one that we have the necessary wording in the exerg of the piece. It gives it a sort of classical feel. But I think that number one, in spite of the great technical abilities of our mint and assurance that this could be a coinable piece, I think this is really a bad design for a coin. I can't read that when it's 4 feet across up there on the screen. And then looking at my 3-inch one here on the page, I can't read that one either. So it's pointless to have a lot of wording like that. It's just filling in what could otherwise be some negative space and something else that could be said. Regarding the Macer, this needs explanation. I mean, people are going to look at this and say, who's Mr. Macer? And if we were to look at the image of a man holding the pumpkin in number four, why wouldn't that actually be Charles Hard Towns? I mean, there would be no reason to exclude him since he's evidently the inventor. Number seven is an attractive piece, but I think South Carolina is going to be totally lost. When I look at these things and try to find it on the 3-inch version that we have here, it looks like there's a little flaw on the coastline of America. We can pick it out barely here on the 4-foot wide image on the screen. And as I think Eric mentioned, we see the Hubble telescope there flying around, looking only back at the Earth. Or is it looking in somewhere? But at any rate, this is a very attractive piece. But I just don't think that the Macer concept works very well as a coin design. So I would definitely go with number two, and I think that we should probably all give some deference to this as that being a strong preference. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. As far as the considerations that I had regarding, I just think in number one, I think that if we do have more negative space and just the We the People, not try and put the inscriptions in or just whatever you guys would come up with, I think would be appropriate, and I think it would work for the coin. As it is, we don't want to try and read it. We don't want to try and make sure that someone can read it on a coin anyhow. I think that I like number one a little bit better than number two simply because of it seems to be a more friendly, warm, peaceful, really nice tone to the depiction here. Number two does look more like a march, and I think Michael brought out the point about this person on the right where, you know, it would be putting in some other additional information in there might be more appropriate than another individual. But I just felt that number one had the tone and the direction that Septima wanted to go with in educating and reaching out. So I'm going to lean my preference more towards number one and have the mint be able to accommodate that writing underneath. As far as the other goes, yes, number seven's pretty good, you know, but it's going to take a lot of reaching. And I believe Dennis also mentioned that it makes a nice compatible set. We'll have three objects for and one figure, just like we did in the other series, and it would complement accordingly. So before we vote, Joe, would you like to make any comments?
Yes, sir. Thank you. You know, symbolism is as much an aesthetic criteria as any type of visual element. And I think the processional nature of SCO2 is not only worthy but necessary of the subject. Ms. Clark, you know, the gravitas of what surrounded everything that she did, the esteem that she was held in by people no less than Dr. King, and it's just, you know, I think the educational element doesn't need to be described in words. It's already there, presented by books. And I just like the four primary element figures in a row, counterpointed by the diagonal flagpole and the horizontal-esque, you know, position of the flag. I just think it's a really, really strong composition. For South Carolina, I'm going to go like really off off in a different direction. I actually like number four very much. There's a movement in contemporary art called lowbrow pop surrealism, and you can see it in magazines. Two of them in particular, Juxtapose magazine and High Fructose. It's a movement that uses figurative elements to create a very contemporary and dynamic visual stories. It's a very figurative art form, and it borders on camp at times. And I think this coin does as well. And I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing. I'm not saying it is camp or kitsch and unworthy of the U.S. coin, but there's just a craziness about this composition that is so radically forward-thinking. I don't think the artist intended to do something lowbrow or pop surrealistic, but I think that this element, this reminds me of, like, you know, something from the 50s with what, like, mad scientist film or something like that, but I just think it's really, really cool. Art visually, just that primary element coming forward, that oversized hand, which I'm usually typically against. I think that photographic perspective is best left for photographs. Michelangelo and all, even up to the 60s and 70s, all visual artists, before the heavy influence of photographs, they would keep forward and background elements the same size, even if they were foreshortened. So this is a very, very, very contemporary image, and I think it's pretty crazy in a cool way.
Okay, Eric. Joe, thank you very much.
Yes, sir. I have a question based on your latter comments here, because I had the same kind of reaction to this one. My question to you is, the heavy outline around the guy here, do you view that as part and parcel to the effect you're calling out, or is that an artifact of the tool that was used to render this?
I think it's deliberately drawn in. I think that outline would have to be part of the sculpture.
And how would you do that? Because that's exactly where I come out.
I would do that by creating a slight... I would extend the sculpt of say his sleeve and of his jacket and his shirt. I'd extend that sculpt to the border of the black line. Then I'd infuse that black line a bit, but leave a little bit of an edge. I'm just like ad-libbing here.
Yeah.
And then the natural draft that we would have to impose on the sculpt could create that white sidewall, or something like that, or maybe not. Maybe I would just make that white sidewall, scribe in the black a little bit, and then have the draft help create that effect.
Yeah, because I'm thinking your boss would come to you and go, "Dieware, dude, if you tried to use high ridge lines to make that kind of crazy glow." But with the incuse, that's brilliant, actually.
I got nothing.
Thank you.
No, it's just, I don't know. I don't know if it would work. So I wouldn't say brilliant. Yeah,
I saw the same kind of wild glow around this guy, and it creates this. This, I don't know what the word you said, kitsch, or what was your other word?
Well, it's pop surrealism. There's a movement that like artists like Robert Williams or James Jean, these are Bill Sienkiewicz, world famous artists who are doing this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it's not the mainstream gallery scene, but if it's the future, and it's an aesthetic that would be really cool if we could embrace a little bit.
Yeah. Certainly worth consideration. Don?
Excuse me for a second. Just make one last appeal that, we don't get the opportunity to, to put, African Americans on a coin. And we don't get many opportunities to put women on coins. And here we have an opportunity to do both. And I think, it's the state's recommendation. It's the first time today we've heard that. We have an opportunity to do something we don't have an opportunity to do. I think we should grab it. And when it comes to the choice of which of the three designs to select, our role here is to select the best art. And, you know, look, honestly, you know, six of one, half a dozen of the other, as to the art, right? But the I suspect the thinking that went on in South Carolina when they were considering which of these designs to recommend, I suspect, you know, there was some thinking that probably went back to, you know, to Martin Luther King's Birmingham letter, where he, you know, where he talks about, you know, we've waited for 125 years, and, you know, we grabbed our freedom, we grabbed our rights, we had to grab it, we had to do something for it. So her sitting there with a book and her sitting there reading, it's great, it's nice, you know, it's nice. But number two got the result. It was number two. It was the action. It was the marching. You know, it was the getting attention. And I think that probably that was the conversation, I'm speculating and guessing, that was the conversation that happened in South Carolina. And I think the reason they didn't put any limitation about, you know, words like citizenship schools is the same as the reason we went back on the Anwar Sadat Congressional Gold Medal, and we said, look, don't limit Anwar Sadat as the president of Egypt. I mean, let's not limit him to that. You know, he's bigger than that. You know, he's more than that. And she's more than that. And I suspect that's why citizenship school is not there, or else I'm going to suppose it would have been there, you know, and you know, because she is bigger than that. So I would make an impassioned plea to go along with design one, two, or three, and of those three designs, I would make an impassioned plea to give the state what it recommends, the way it recommends it, and not substitute our judgment here, you know, in the very limited time we've had to express our judgment, for their judgment, which, you know, we would presume has taken place over a much longer period of time with a much wider constituency who knows the subject matter and understands the subject matter and feels the subject matter probably more than we do. Right.
Chairman, I'm sorry, I was going to say, Megan is the program manager for this
work, has feedback, I think, directly from the folks with whom she worked, just to underscore Mr. Scrinchy's point.
So from the liaison, I have the following comments for design two. The visual of Septima Clark, quote, leading the charge, quote, on the coin, embodies the bravery and commitment she displayed as a leader of the civil rights movement. It looks as though the four people on this coin are on a mission. Three are armed with books, while the fourth individual embodies the ultimate goal of Septima's teaching, equal citizenship for African Americans.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lane. Aaron?
Donald, consistent with your emphasis here, if this is selected, would you move to have the text added, as we've talked about citizen schools?
No, that's my point. I think she's bigger than that.
So you would vote against a motion like that?
I would vote against it, and I just think it's fine the way it is. My thinking being the same as my thinking was for the Anwar Sadat coin. And that worked brilliantly, and that was an amazing coin.
Thank you.
Chairman,
go ahead.
Sure. At one point, to the four figures, I think that the artist was very astute in adding that young woman on the right, and as it was suggested, maybe she should be taken off, but I think we need her because she depicts more of an adult woman.
Continuity.
So we're going from a young girl to an older woman, and she was also teaching.
She's the next generation to lead us.
Correct. And I think we need to have her.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, if you would make your selections and pass those over to Greg, and while we're doing that, we will also announce the first rounds of voting while they're tabulating this last one.
I'll wait just a moment until the score sheet comes in, so we can all be on the same page.
Sorry, Tom.
That's right. Got it.
Breaking that into four different discussions may take a little more time, but it's much more.
I have. We'll start with the results. Want to go state by state, Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
Okay. Well, let me start with Connecticut. Hold them back up on the board. Okay. Design Connecticut number one had 3 votes. Number two had 6 votes. Number three had 5 votes. Number four had 2 votes. Number five had 4 votes. Design six had 5 votes. 6A had 2 votes. Design seven had 7 votes. 7A had 7 votes. Design eight had 26 votes, which is the highest vote getter.
Did you say 28?
26.
26, okay.
Design 9 had 1 vote. Design 10 had 5 votes. Design 11 had 13 votes. Design 12 had 7 votes. 13 had 1 vote. 14 had 1 vote. 14A had 1 vote. 15 had 4 votes. And Design 16 had 21 votes, making it the number 2 vote getter.
21.
I'll be there.
21.
So,
it's got everything.
So we have, there are 11 members here for a total, for a maximum vote of 33, which means arguably you need 17 to have a recommendation, and you have that in 2 of them. So once again, design number 8 at 26, design number 16 at 21. So they're close.
Would anyone like to make a motion to accept Eric?
I'd like to make a motion that the committee officially makes 2 recommendations, specifically 1 for each of the 2 innovation topics.
Second, or second?
Do we have a second?
Second.
Second by Michael.
No discussion.
And any discussion? Seeing none, I have a vote to rank them as accordingly. 08 is 26 votes in Connecticut's 16 as 21 votes, and we would submit that for their consideration. All those in favor, signify.
That wasn't my motion.
I thought you wanted both.
No, well,
but not to
no rank order.
Oh, okay. Just to submit.
Make 2 recommendations.
Okay. So that's clarified. All those in favor, signify, saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Well, how many opposed do we have? 4.
Passed.
Dean.
Dean is off. Dean has left the conversation.
I
apologize.
It passes 7-4.
Okay.
Yeah, 7-4.
Okay, moving right along
to Massachusetts. Yeah, Massachusetts sign. Design number 1 received 23 votes, which is the highest vote getter. Number 2 received 2 votes. Number 3 received 5 votes. Number 4 received 6 votes. Number 5 received 3 votes. Number 6 received 1 vote. Number 7 received 7 votes. Design 8 received 12 votes. Design 9 received 1 vote. Design 10 received 1 vote. Design 11 received 1 vote. Design 12 received 1 vote. Design 13 received 1 vote. And design 14 received 17 votes.
Okay, Greg, thank you. And how many on MA1?
Number 1 received 23 votes.
23. Okay, once again, somewhat close, but on the same token, not quite. So are there any motions that we'd like to present?
I'd make an identical motion that the committee puts forth 2 equal recommendations, 1 for each of the 2 topics.
Second. All those in favor signify saying aye. Any further discussion, first of all? Any further discussion? All those in favor signify saying aye that we submit them equally?
Aye.
Opposed.
Anybody else opposed?
I'm opposed.
How many?
Okay, let's start again.
By a show of hands.
7-4.
Okay, all those in favor of the motion presenting both equally, raise your hand. 1, 2, 3.
We have some no voters.
You're opposed, Dean?
Ask to be opposed.
Opposed? 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Motion fails. And we need another motion now. Would you like to make anyone entertain a motion? I'll entertain a motion to accept number 01, MA01.
Just is without a motion.
Yeah, I mean, but I still, okay. I think we should, well, you don't need one, but if we're not going to do the same, I think you would want to at least put our recommendation in based on it.
That was what our vote was.
It's going to get the highest vote.
You don't have
to. Okay, you don't want to. Okay.
By default, it's fine.
Okay. Next.
Okay, moving to Maryland. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Design number 1 received 7 votes. Design number 2 received 2 votes. Design number 3 received 4 votes. Design number 4 received 1 vote. 4A received 1 vote. Design number 5 received 26 votes, which is the highest vote getter. Design number 6 received 1 vote. Design number 7 received 16 votes. Design number 8 received 1 vote. Design number 9 received 2 votes. Design number 10 received 2 votes. Design number 11 received 1 vote. Design number 12 received 3 votes. Design number 13 received 3 votes. Design number 14 received 10 votes. And design number 15 received 17 votes.
Okay, do we have any motions regarding the designs? Seeing none, we'll accept MD 26 votes. Number 5.
Hold on 1 second. Okay.
Robert, you did have a question earlier about making a motion on the stars for that Hubble on Maryland. Would you like to present that motion at this time?
Surely. Well, my recommendation was actually with a different design, though.
Okay, so you'll pass.
Yeah, but I would suggest that these things be made to look as much like stars as possible.
Okay.
Here, each one is like a little
then we'll have that as technical. That'll be fine.
I think the point of the Hubble Space Telescope is this precision accuracy as far as possible on the images in space.
Okay, very good. Just want to make sure. Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Move on to South Carolina. Ready? Okay. Design number 1 received 21 votes. Design number 2 received 23 votes, making it the highest vote getter. Design number 3 received 2 votes. Design number 4 received 9 votes. Designs number 5, 5A, 6, and 6A all received 0 votes. Design number 7 received 14 votes. Design number 8 received 2 votes. Design number 9 received 0 votes.
Thank you, Greg. Would anyone like to entertain a motion regarding South Carolina? Seeing none, we will defer to SCO2 as our recommendation. And thank you, everyone, for a really good discussion today on our first round here, and we'll recess at this point. Now, due to some travel and so forth, it's possible that the stakeholders will be here at a quarter till the hour, correct? Is that what time we were talking?
They're going to be ready for our reconvening, which is at 1:45 p.m.
Okay, so 1:45, and we will have a thorough discussion regarding congressional gold medals. Thank you.
Awesome adherence to the agenda.
I don't understand what we just did.
See, let me get my script here.
I get it. Been there.
Welcome back, everyone. At this time, we're going to move to our congressional gold medal discussion, and I'd like to call on April Stafford, Chief of the Mint's Office of Design and Management, to present the obverse and reverse candidate designs for the USS Indianapolis Congressional Gold Medal. April, and the stakeholders as well, appropriately.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much. In accordance with Public Law 115-338, the USS Indianapolis Congressional Gold Medal Act awards a Congressional Gold Medal collectively to the crew of USS Indianapolis in recognition of their perseverance, bravery, and service to the United States. Following a notable service record during which she was awarded 10 battle stars, USS Indianapolis, also known as CA-35, was attacked with missiles from a Japanese submarine and sank in 12 minutes on July 30, 1945. Of the 1,195 who sailed, only 316 men survived. Those who made it into the water were subjected to exposure, dehydration, and shark attacks over the course of more than 5 nights and 4 days. Our liaisons have identified preferences from this portfolio. So before I hand over the mic to our liaison to say a few words, we'll show those to you now. They've identified obverse 7A and reverse 7. And as I noted, we have with us today our liaison to this program, Peggy Campo with the USS Indianapolis Survivors Organization, and Sarah Vladek, author and historian. Peggy, are you there? And if so, would you like to say a few words?
Yes, I'm here, April. Thanks. Hello, everyone. I'm Peggy McCall Campo, daughter of USS Indianapolis survivor Don McCall. My father served on Indianapolis for 2 years. People often referred to Dad as a hero. He was quick to correct them by saying, "I'm not a hero, just a survivor. The heroes didn't come home." To a man, that's what the Indianapolis survivors always say. Dad passed away in June 2017 at the age of 92. I'm also secretary of the Survivors Organization, and I'm very pleased to speak with you today on their behalf. 12 survivors remain now, and they are 92 to 97 years old. Survivors Organization Chairman Harold Gray expressed to me that he and the other men are very grateful to be acknowledged with this Congressional Gold Medal honoring their crew, especially those who perished in the sinking. I will add that this recognition is also very meaningful to the families of the survivors and of the men who were lost at sea. Now I'll introduce my friend, Sarah Vladek.
Hello, everyone. My name is Sarah Vladek, and I am a historian and
Storytellers Corps in Indianapolis in 2003. I was tasked by the Survivor Organization as being one of their storytellers. And since then, I have interviewed over 100 of the Indianapolis survivors, the rescue crew that saved them from the waters after surviving 5 nights and 4 days in the Pacific, and have written a book that was released in 2018 in the New York Times bestseller. So these men have charged me with making sure their story is done and done well, and I'm very honored to be part of it and help in any way I can.
Thank you. April?
Thank you. We'll start with the obverse designs. Design 1 depicts USS Indianapolis shelling targets in the Pacific Theater during World War II. The 10 battle stars earned by Indianapolis are displayed around the ship. The 4-star flag highlights Admiral Spruance's service and Indianapolis's status as his flagship. Inscriptions are USS Indianapolis and Act of Congress 2018. Obverse 2 features USS Indianapolis sailing through the Pacific Ocean. Her history is told through her 10 battle stars, the Admiral's flag, and her hull number. The inscriptions USS Indianapolis, CA-35, 1932, her in-service year, and 1945 are seen below the ship. The additional inscriptions, 1,195 on board and 316 survived, recall the fateful day of her sinking. Obverse 3 portrays a head-on view of USS Indianapolis, surrounded by a life preserver as a border element. Her 10 battle stars are included, along with the inscriptions USS Indianapolis and Act of Congress 2018. Obverse 4 depicts a head-on view of USS Indianapolis underway, surrounded by the 10 battle stars she was awarded. Obverse 5 features USS Indianapolis with a survivor in the foreground, while a PBY-5A Catalina, one of the rescue planes, flies overhead. 10 battle stars arc across the top border. The inscription, 316 survived, is seen above the ship. Obverse 7 and 7A depict USS Indianapolis with her 10 battle stars. Interspersed among a border of rivets are the inscriptions USS Indianapolis CA-35 and her dates of service, 1932 to 1945. The additional inscription, Act of Congress 2018, is also included. Design 7A, seen here, removes the clouds and the Act of Congress inscription and includes an Admiral's 4-star flag, noting her status as a flagship, along with the Marine Corps and Navy emblems. Again, obverse 7A is the preferred obverse of the liaison. Obverse 8 features a head-on silhouette of USS Indianapolis surrounded by her battle stars. The top portion of the outer ring is recessed and includes the inscription 1,195 sailed, while the bottom portion is raised and includes the inscription 316 survived. The additional inscriptions USS Indianapolis CA-35 and Act of Congress 2018 are also included. Obverse 9 represents USS Indianapolis with a close-up of her hull and features both the traditional rivets and hull number 35. Her 10 battle stars are arced across the top. Inscriptions are USS Indianapolis CA-35 and 1,195 sailed, 316 survived. Obverse 11 depicts USS Indianapolis underway. Her hull number is inscribed in the field. Her 10 battle stars flank the ship in the border, while the inscriptions Act of Congress 2018 and USS Indianapolis CA-35 arc across the top and bottom. Obverse 12 depicts USS Indianapolis cruising in the ocean. The inscriptions USS Indianapolis and Act of Congress 2018 arc across the sky. Across the bottom of the design are her 10 battle stars and the Admiral's flag. Moving on to the reverse designs. Reverse 1 depicts symbols of hope from the tragic attack on USS Indianapolis. The spotlight from the rescue vessel USS Cecil J. Doyle, flanked by angel wings. Many of the survivors compared the sighting of the first plane to spot the survivors to that of seeing an angel,
while the ship's spotlight seemed like a light shining down from the heavens. The composition includes the inscription, 879, Lost at Sea. Reverse 2 depicts the survivor's view from a life raft as a PBY 5A Catalina begins a water landing. The plane rescued 53 crew members before additional survivors were picked up by the rescue ships. Reverse 3 depicts a sea-level view of the USS Indianapolis survivors as a PBY 5A Catalina plane begins to land on the water, providing rescue to 53 of the survivors. Inscriptions include 1,195 sailed, 316 survived, and July 30th, 1945. Reverse 4 features in-flight views of two of the key aircraft involved in the rescue, a PV-1 Ventura and a PBY-5A Catalina. The Navy and Marine Corps emblems flank the design with the inscriptions July 30th, 1945, Still at Sea, and Act of Congress 2018 interspersed throughout the design. Reverse 5 features the searchlight from the USS Cecil J. Doyle shining into the sky, providing hope for the survivors in the water and a location to other ships headed to the rescue site. Included inscriptions are July 30th, 1945 and 879, Still at Sea. Reverse 6 centrally depicts the Navy and Marine Corps emblems representing the service members on board USS Indianapolis. A continual ring of the SOS distress signal in Morse code circles the border, recalling those who are still lost at sea. Inscriptions are Silent but Not Forgotten and July 30th, 1945. Reverse 7 depicts a group of survivors clinging to a raft. They've spotted either a plane or the USS Cecil J. Doyle, giving them renewed hope for their rescue. The PV-1 Ventura, the PBY-5A Catalina, and the Doyle were all essential to critical moments in the rescue. Additional inscriptions include 1,195 sailed, 316 survived, and Act of Congress 2018. Again, reverse 7 is the preferred reverse of the liaison. Reverse 8 portrays an empty life jacket in the water representing those lost at sea, while the two planes primarily involved in the rescue, a PV-1 Ventura and PBY-5A Catalina, are seen overhead. Around the border are the inscriptions July 30th, 1945 and 1,195 sailed, 316 survived. Reverse 9 depicts the same rescue planes as in obverse 8, but with survivors in the water seeing rescuers at hand. Reverse 10 features a compass rose overlaying a map of the last course undertaken by USS Indianapolis, also known as the Petty Route. Directional markings are found around the border, interspersed with the inscriptions 1,195 on board, 316 survived, July 30th, 1945, and still at sea. And finally, reverse 11 depicts a silhouette of USS Indianapolis superimposed over a map of the Petty Route. A compass rose is positioned in the top right. Directional markings are found around the border, interspersed with the inscriptions 1,195 on board, 316 survived, July 30th, 1945, and still at sea. Mr. Chairman?
Thank you, April. Are there any technical questions from the committee about the designs before we begin general discussion? Seeing none, let's begin.
Did you say which design the constituent group wanted?
7A, yeah. Obverse.
Which one?
7A.
7A, Obverse.
Reverse 07.
7A, Obverse.
Pardon me, this is Sarah. It was actually 7, not 7A, for the Obverse.
Thank you.
So it's number 7, Obverse, and what's the Reverse?
7.
Thank you, Sarah. Appreciate 7 and that.
7. So 7 and 7. Could I mean, Mr. Chairman, maybe we could start.
You need your mic, Don.
Oh, I'm sorry. And there was and just to be clear, there was no second choice for this constituent group. That was their choice, and they're clear about that as their choice.
I believe so. Yes.
Both Peggy and Sarah are on the phone.
Peggy and Sarah, this is Donald Scarinci. Are you clear on 7 and 7 as your choice? Was anything else close to your consideration, or is that the one that your group really feels strongly about?
Well, this is Peggy, and I just want to say that we like a lot of these designs, but as we looked at them and we shared them with our chairman, Harold Bray, we just kept going back to 07 for the uppers and 07 for the reverse. And if the committee, though, has other thoughts, I think we'd appreciate hearing them, but that's what we're leaning towards right now, yes.
Okay, thank you. So with that, go ahead, Michael.
I interject something here. If you go with 7 as opposed to 7A, you have act of Congress on both obverse and reverse. That'll have to be dealt with.
Correct. We noticed that actually in just these last revisions. So, yes.
It's easy enough to drop off of the obverse and give you a clear field there going up to the ship. I ask you to make one other consideration between 7 and 7A. And that is 7A without the clouds gives you a much sharper, clearly defined ship with good negative space. Whereas if you put the smoke in the background or the clouds, either one, you're not going to have as sharp a design, I don't think, in terms of visual appeal.
Okay.
We've talked about this at the Mint. I respectfully disagree with that. I think that the clouds are treated in a very low relief with a nice soft touch, and that ship is nice and bold and strongly depicted. I think the contrast between the two would be striking, and I think that the pattern of clouds, the silhouette of the clouds as they diagonally go up to the right of the coin, of the metal, provide a more interesting negative space silhouette,
yep,
for shape than just the straight line going across the horizon. So I'm not saying I think you're wrong. I'm just saying I feel differently.
Excuse me. Can I just ask this question about 07? Don't we see a little bit of land or underneath those clouds?
I think those are more clouds.
Is that more clouds to go
on the horizon, yeah.
Okay.
There would have been no land up there.
Yeah, I thought it was very, very, very poetic, actually.
Go ahead, Don.
I'm going to try this anyway. I'm going to try doing this anyway because, I mean, quite honestly, nothing really here stands out for me. And I don't know if people feel passionately you could vote this down, but, I'd like to make a motion that we subject to the adjustment of the Act of Congress slogan, that we adopt, that we vote to approve obverse 7 and reverse 7.
We have a motion.
Second.
You have a motion, too.
Second.
Joe, do you have another additional opinion on both those designs?
No, we were conferring. I was conferring with my boss. I missed the
motion.
That's
okay. Reverse 7 and obverse 7. Do you have anything further to say regarding the elements?
No, sir.
No. So we have a motion on the table.
Second.
Second by Eric. So we are voting to adopt both obverse 7 and reverse 7. And any discussion? Robert?
One observation. I think probably almost anyone who's aware of the Indianapolis probably is aware of the fact that what it's most famous for and known for is the fact that so many of the sailors got eaten by sharks. Anybody who has seen the film Jaws, for instance, this is something that I don't know if we want to consider it, but maybe showing a shark fin or two might be kind of gruesome. But
he had some of those Canadian coins that have the shark on it,
yeah.
Right?
No.
So just a thought.
Strongly encourage against that. This is Sarah speaking.
Exactly.
In fact, it's
exactly,
really
Sarah.
Just not something the family wants.
Right.
Sarah, you had several committee members shaking their heads. I didn't agree with that. But thank you for confirming.
Yes. Thank you, Sarah. Any other discussion? Dennis?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to since we're on a public record, commend the artist for number one. That's a
obverse or reverse?
Obverse one. It's a very visually dramatic design and focuses on the ship in action rather than its tragic end. And I think it's a view that I've never seen before on a Congressional Gold Medal, that kind of aerial three-quarter profile, if you will.
Yeah.
So I think it's very nicely done, and I think the artist deserves public commendation.
Thank you, Dennis. Eric?
And
sorry, Mary, I'll get you.
I'd make a similar comment to the artist on reverse design five. This committee has often expressed a preference towards symbology, and I see that design as extraordinarily symbolically powerful.
Thank you. Mary?
And I would like to go on record to congratulate the artist for obverse nine, potentially paired with the artist who did obverse reverse five. I think that graphically those convey hope and also the elements of the tragedy, and I just think that that would make it tremendous. Congressional Gold Medal. Thank you.
I would echo Mary's comment there regarding those two designs. I think it's very, we were kind of talking about it, very similar to the USO concept that we did on
OSS.
OSS, I'm sorry.
Different than USO.
Yeah. But no, I mean, it was similar, but the artists do deserve that credit regarding that. So we have a motion on the table. We have a second. Go ahead.
For clarity, you're talking about removing the act of Congress from the obverse, correct? Just so we can put that in.
That's correct.
Our notes. Thank you.
That's correct. So, Donald?
We can also, by the way, I mean, look, I would have to agree with you if this were my medal, but it's not. I mean, 9.95 it would be an awesome medal. So what we could do, you know, is we can vote to approve and...
You're not approving, you're recommending.
Vote to recommend. We could vote to recommend their choice of either. And then they can talk about it, you know, give them something to talk about. Unless the constituent group is completely ruling out the concept of nine, the preference of an obverse nine mated with a five.
Well, I think that if you'd like to, and Eric has already said that he would agree, so if you'd like to submit them both, because I think that would then give both Peggy and Sarah, I think, some leeway in our opinion as well.
You're amending your motion?
I'll amend the motion to recommend that
7 and 7, 9 and 5.
Right.
Okay.
And I'll second that.
Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing that.
I'm sorry. Just because we do have our liaisons on the phone, I just would like to take a moment, Peggy and Sarah, to ensure you understand what's being put on the table. In addition to supporting the obverse and reverse preferences you came into the meeting with, the committee, it seems, is urging you to consider obverse 9 and reverse 5 because of the very impactful symbolic qualities of this pairing, that they feel it would be an incredibly striking combination to communicate about this subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you have any questions about that, Peggy and Sarah, if you wanted to engage in a little discussion, but they're about to just vote on that.
This is Peggy. I love our 05. I really love that. But, and so, yes, I like that very much, that we would still have that option. And I also liked the other one we're talking about now is Obverse 9 for us.
Obverse 9 and reverse 5.
Yes. Right. And I think that one's awesome, too. I mean, those are great images. We had some really great images to refer to there. So I like that idea very much. So if you would like to vote to recommend all of those, that would be great. And then we could still have the opportunity to discuss that again and narrow down, correct?
Correct. Okay. Anything additional at this point, Peggy?
Not that
that I can think of. Sarah, anything from you?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, Mary?
Peggy and Sarah, I'd just like to give you like a 30-second background on the OSF Congressional Gold Medal that we did. We had a large number of designs when those came out, including some preferences by the stakeholders. And they were very complicated, and we couldn't really agree on things. And I was looking at the designs and said, this would make a great movie poster. So they came back at the following meeting. We refined the designs that we had, and ultimately what we picked for the OSF was clean, it was simple, and it was very, very powerful. And it was, I think, probably one of the better congressional gold medals that we have ever produced. And the characteristics of Obverse 9 and Reverse 5 really remind me of that congressional gold medal. And so that's just all I want to say. It's not that I dishonor your interest in 7 and 7, but really consider 9 and 5, please. Thank you.
And Peggy, you know, if I may add, this is Donald again. If I may simply add, the reason it stands out is because when you look at the designs in the portfolio, you know, quite honestly, we could sit here for the next hour and debate the nuances of the variations of everything else. You know, honestly, your selection of 7 and 7 is just, you know, certainly just as good as everything else. So we might as well go with 7 and 7. But if you want something that's going to really stand out, pop, and be special, and have an emotional appeal, and be different, you know, what does stand out in this portfolio is the pairing of 9 and 5. And I think that's what you're hearing us tell you. Rather than to have us spend an hour talking about this, this is really simple. This is a simple presentation because there's really only two different genres of designs for you to really consider. One is the traditional, that is the one that you seem to prefer right now, which is 7 and 7. It's just as good as anything else. Or you can do something, you know, that if you think about it a little bit and mull it over, has a much more emotional impact and a much more powerful medal artistically. So, you know, and I realize that's not, you know, that you know, for people not used to seeing medals, you know, at first blush, that might not be as obvious. But maybe, maybe when you go back and take another look, people in your organization might actually see what we see and prefer that. So you asked for our judgment. We short-circuited the process a touch for you if people vote on this motion, and you know, that's our judgment based on the portfolio.
Thank you, Dawn. And so we have a motion. We've had discussion. I'd like to take a vote. All those in favor of the motion signify saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Opposed, one.
Motion carries.
Okay, moving right along. And Peggy and Sarah, thank you very much for your input, and I'm sure that you'll be satisfied with either selection that you make, and it'll be a true tribute to your to the USS Indianapolis. So thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's a no-brainer.
Thank you so much, Peggy and Sarah. Goodbye. Goodbye.
Thank you. Okay, back to April in our Chief of the Mint's Office of Design Management to present the obverse and reverse candidate designs for the Chinese American Veterans of World War II Congressional Gold Medal. April?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Public Law 115-337, the Chinese American Veterans of World War II Congressional Gold Medal Act, awards a Congressional Gold Medal collectively to Chinese American veterans in recognition of their dedicated service during World War II. Chinese Americans have served the United States in every conflict since the Civil War and distinguished themselves in World War II. During that war, they served in every theater and every branch of the service and earned citations for their heroism and honorable service, including the Medal of Honor. Despite facing immense discrimination at the time, as many as 20,000 Chinese Americans served in the military during World War II. Approximately 40% of those who served were not United States citizens due to the laws that denied citizenship to persons of Chinese descent. Chinese Americans, although small in numbers, made important contributions to the World War II effort.
They are known for their role in the 14th Air Force, widely known as the Flying Tigers. Additionally, many Chinese American women served in the Women's Army Corps, the Army Air Forces, and the United States Naval Reserve Women's Reserve. Some became pilots, air traffic controllers, flight trainers, weather forecasters, occupational therapists, and nurses. The United States remains indebted to the bravery, valor, and dedication that the Chinese American veterans of World War II displayed. The commitment and sacrifice of Chinese Americans demonstrates a highly commendable sense of patriotism in the face of discrimination. Designs were developed in consultation with our liaison, Major General Robert Lee, retired, who is an advisor for the Chinese American Veterans of World War II Recognition Project. In order to represent the breadth of Chinese American veteran service, artists were asked to consider that Chinese Americans, including women, served in every branch of the military. Additionally, they served in all theaters of the war. So artists were asked to try to include an M4 Sherman tank, an Iowa-class battleship, and a P-40 plane to illustrate these veterans' contributions on land, on the sea, and in the air. Because the USS Missouri was the location of the Japanese surrender ceremony on September 2, 1945, artists were asked to place the ship's number 63 on the Iowa-class battleships in the design. Act of Congress 2018 proudly served as Americans, and Chinese American veterans of World War II were provided as potential inscriptions. Please note that the hyphens currently featured in the inscriptions for Chinese American will be removed. We're fortunate to have with us Major General Robert Lee with us today, should any questions be addressed. But first, I'd like to show the liaison's preferences. Here they are. Obverse 7 shows the full breadth of service in the depictions of representatives from all six branches of service and a female figure, with some of the figures looking toward the viewer. Reverse 6 features a M4 Sherman tank, an Iowa-class battleship, and a P-40 plane. I would note that this reverses their preference, but they have requested that a border element of an addition of a separate reverse design be added to this reverse, and we have just a mock-up for you so that you could see that, and we can bring it up later as well, but this would be the preferred reverse representation of our liaison. So with that, Major General Robert Lee, would you like to say a few words and perhaps introduce your team?
Yes, thank you very much, April. First of all, I'm Major General Robert Lee, United States Army, retired, and with pleasure working with the team from the United States, April and Vanessa, in going through the fabulous designs. I wanted this commission to also realize that we had a large diversity because the veterans were diverse, serving in every service. I'd like to introduce Major General Darrell Wong, United States Air Force, retired, then Major General Stephen Tom, United States Army, retired. Major General William Chen, United States Army, retired. Mr. Ed Gore, who is the chair for the Chinese American Citizenship Alliance. Unfortunately, our naval representatives, Rear Admiral Jonathan Ewan and Commander Evelyn Boy, we did have a female representative on the design committee, could not attend due to travel, and we were most fortunate to also have on our design committee the former director of the United States Mint, Mr. Inman. And it was tough, a lot of good designs, but as April stated in the narrative that we sent to the artists, we believe that with some additional modifications, the people on the front, and that we got from former director Ed Moy, people first. The intended audience for this will be the descendants of the Chinese American World War II veterans. So they'll be facing this coin with all the service members facing them. Because you have all the services there, it's evident that they served in every theater. We don't have to state that. And from all the service members that they served and fought in the air, on land, and sea. So we went with platforms and objects on the reverse and people on the obverse. And we appreciate the slight changes that the artists will be willing to make for the
minor corrections. For example, the rifle by the soldier should be a M1 Garand rifle. Very few Chinese Americans were officers, and that's a carbine. So that represents really more of the majority of the Army World War II veterans, Chinese American descent. So we're looking forward to your questions from the varied members of the committee that you might have on our choices. Thank you.
Thank you, Major General.
Also, I'd like to call on MINT Director David J. Ryder for several remarks.
I'll just use that microphone. It's going to be very quick, but first of all, gentlemen, thank you for your service. My mother served in China as a naval nurse on the ship Hope during the encephalitis outbreak in China. I've been to China maybe 50 to 60 times, probably more. I'm a big supporter of this coin, of this Congressional Gold Medal. I couldn't think of a better representation for us to help design this product. I'm a huge supporter of it, and I congratulate you for bringing Ed involved. Ed and I go back a long way, several White Houses. But most importantly, I want to say thank you for all your service. You guys have to be applauded and congratulated for all the good things that you're doing, and this is one of the best. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Director.
Thank you, Director. Anything else at this point?
Yes, sir. Just I'll move through the portfolio with the description. Yes, starting with the obverse designs. Obverse 1 depicts two Chinese-American veterans, one male, an enlisted Army infantryman, and one female, a field nurse, with a star-filled field behind them. Both figures are shown looking into the distance, solemnly holding their hands over their hearts. Obverse 2 centrally features a World War II Chinese-American soldier and nurse. Obverse 3 centrally features three World War II Chinese-American veterans across the midsection of the medal. From the left are an airman, a soldier, and a field nurse. Below the trio, an M4 Sherman tank sits in a landscape, and flying overhead are two P-40 Warhawks of the Flying Tigers Squadron. Obverses 4 and 4A portray an arrangement of World War II Chinese-American veterans representing all six of the U.S. military services, an Iowa-class battleship, a Flying Tigers P-40 Warhawk, and a land promontory represent the land, sea, and air that they fought on and in. This is design 4, which additionally features a servicewoman, and 4A. Obverse 5 represents the Chinese Americans who fought in all theaters, in all services, and on land, sea, and in the air. Depicted is an Iowa-class ship and a P-40 Warhawk aircraft from the Flying Tigers Squadron, with a bit of land on the right side, if you can see it there, evoking their land duties. An additional inscription is distinguished in every theater in every service. Obverse 6 features an Iowa-class battleship, an M4 Sherman tank, and a P-40 Warhawk aircraft from the Flying Tigers to highlight that Chinese Americans fought in all theaters with all services on land, sea, and in the air. Obverse 7, our liaison's preference, depicts Chinese American servicemen and a nurse representing all U.S. service branches in World War II, and highlighting that they fought in every theater with honor. Additional inscriptions include distinguished service and proudly served on land, sea, and in the air. Some minor changes the liaisons have requested would be first to replace the inscription with proudly served as Americans. As our liaison noted, change the rifle to an M1 rifle, and we would just be sure that the Army Air Force's helmet would have the appropriate goggles on the top of the helmet. That would to make it historically accurate. So minor changes there. The most, I think, substantive one for your awareness would be the change to the inscription. Obverse 8 features a beach landing with Chinese American infantrymen supported by a M4 Sherman tank. The USS Iowa is on the horizon, and a P-40 Warhawk used by the Flying Tigers is overhead. Six stars represent the six branches of the U.S. military in which Chinese American veterans served with distinction and honor. Obverse 9 features four Chinese American veterans representing by uniform all six of the military branches. In World War II, people serving in different military organizations sometimes wore similar or even identical uniforms. So the aim by the artist in this design is that by making the uniforms as general as possible, people in all of the services would be able to see themselves in the design. There are six stars, one for each of the military branches inscribed. Obverse 10 depicts three Chinese American veterans, an Army Air Force pilot, a nurse who could be with the Army or Navy, and an infantryman standing proudly with a World War II era American flag behind them. The design represents how Chinese Americans distinguish themselves by serving in all six branches of the military. Obverse 11 depicts all six branches of the military in which Chinese Americans served in World War II. Their depictions rise into the sky, where their bravery and patriotism shine for all. Obverses 12 and 13 feature Feng Huang, a mythological bird found in Chinese mythology that reigns over all other birds. It is commonly called the Chinese phoenix and is often described as a composite of many birds, just as the Chinese American veterans comprise members of all branches of the armed forces. At one time, it was said to have both male and female attributes, which also represents that both Chinese American men and women served in World War II. Two of the Chinese phoenix's main qualities are virtue and loyalty. Around the Chinese phoenix are a battleship, an M4 Sherman tank, and P-40 Warhawks. This is obverse 12 and 13. Obverse 14 depicts tanks being loaded on a transport ship, representing the service of Chinese Americans on land and sea during World War II. These transport ships were used to carry troops and logistics to all theaters of the war. Above the ships fly three P-40 Warhawks, depicting the service of Chinese Americans in the air. Obverse 15 portrays an Army nurse with an expression of patriotic pride alongside a pilot outfitted in flight gear and Navy and Coast Guard sailors in front of the background of a 48-star American flag. P-40 Warhawks are in a V-flight formation above the Iowa-class battleship and an M-40 Sherman tank. Moving on to the reverses. Reverse 1 sees an Iowa-class battleship based on the USS Missouri speeding along, an M-40 Sherman battle tank leaving behind a trail of incused tread tracks, and a P-40 Warhawk flying in the foreground. An additional raised inscription reading, "Proud to serve as Americans," is arced at the top, and below it are six stars representing the six branches of the military. Reverses 2 and 2A depict land, air, and sea in a stylized manner reflective of the heritage of the Chinese American veterans of World War II. Inscriptions are land, air, sea, and proud to be an American. This is design 2. Design 2A additionally features a P-40 Warhawk, an M4 Sherman tank, and an Iowa-class battleship. Reverse 3 centrally features four Chinese American veterans across the midsection of the medal. From the left are a Marine, a Navy officer, a Merchant Marine, and a Coast Guardsman. At the bottom, an Iowa-class battleship sails forward. At the top, a 48-star American flag flies behind the men. Reverses 4 and 5 centrally feature a 48-star flag flying above the additional inscription, "Proud to Serve," with clouds in the background. Chinese Americans were proud to be Americans first, before ancestry or ethnicity. Design 4 is encircled with the additional inscriptions of the six branches of service, and I'll note that this is the very border that the liaisons had requested be applied to their preferred reverse. Speaking of preferred reverse, reverse 6 features an Iowa-class battleship, an M4 Sherman tank, and a P-40 Warhawk from the Flying Tigers, showcased in front of a World War II era American flag. Included inscriptions are "In every service, in every theater," and "Proud to serve as an American." So this is the liaison's preference, but it would be shown with an outer border. So I'll ask if we can call that image up. For this reverse, we have already removed the inscription "Proud to serve as an American," which showed in the original, and replaced it with No, I'm sorry.
I have to close this.
Okay, that's all right.
I have it up on my screen.
Sure, sure. So I'll pause while we wait for that.
Not letting me do it. Technology. I know.
All right. So we removed the inscriptions "Proud to serve as an American" and "In every service in every theater" because the obverse, the preferred obverse, covers those sentiments. The text, of course, to represent the six service branches is accomplished by the addition of the border. And some other very minor tweaks that the liaisons pointed out. The aircraft should have Army Air Force's roundels on the bottom of the wings. A request, okay, they are there. A request to add 63 to the battleship and remove the antenna at the front of the battleship. Okay? So those are all represented in this image. So this is probably the most accurate representation of what the liaisons requested edits would be. All right, moving back to our candidate designs, reverse 7. Reverse 7 centrally features an eagle below the raised letters of the additional inscription, "Proud to serve as Americans," encircled by a stylized wreath of laurel leaves against a stippled background. Reverses 8 and 8A features Chinese American veterans representing each of the six branches of the military with a World War II era American flag in the background. The hands on their hearts evoke the patriotism and loyalty of the Chinese American men and women who served, while the additional inscription of "Proud to serve as Americans" is above the six stars in Design 8. The inscriptions "Valor, Honor, Loyalty, and Americans First" are inscribed in Design 8A. Reverses 9 and 9A portray an M4 Sherman tank, the USS Iowa, and a P-40 Warhawk representing land, sea, and air. In Design 9, the inscription "Proud to Serve" conveys the Chinese Americans' veterans were patriotic Americans who felt compelled to serve their country, while the additional inscription "Proud to Serve as Americans" communicates a similar idea in Design 9A. Reverses 10 and 10A depict an Iowa-class battleship flanked by two P-40 Warhawk Flying Tiger warplanes on either side. In the foreground, two M4 Sherman tanks are in profile, facing outward. The design emphasizes how Chinese Americans fought in all theaters of operation during the war, and this is further emphasized by the additional inscriptions. This is Design 10. Design 10A, they have two M4 Sherman tanks and are in a three-quarter view, facing outward. Reverses 11, 11A, and 11B prominently feature six full plum blossoms, symbolizing resilience and perseverance in the face of adversity. Here, the six blossoms also represent the six branches of the military. Also shown are a P-40 Warhawk, an M4 Sherman tank, and an Iowa-class battleship to denote their service on land, in the air, and on the sea. This is Design 11, 11A, and 11B. And finally, Designs 12 and 12A remember the contributions of the Chinese American veterans of World War II to the Allied victory. The three environments of land, air, and sea in which the brave veterans fought are presented within a ring of 48 stars symbolizing the country at the time. This is Design 12. And 12A additionally depicts the military vehicles used by Chinese American veterans. Mr. Chair?
Thank you, April. And once again, thank you, Major General Robert Lee, for being here with us. I have a little bit of a connection. I've been a proud sponsor in Pittsburgh of the organization Chinese Americans for over 25 years. And I've worked in for some of the youth scholarships at the University of Pittsburgh for the OCA as well. Been a proud supporter of the organization.
General, I neglected to say one thing to you guys. The United States Mint workforce, which consists of about 1,600 people, was 35% veterans. Mm-hmm. And if you guys want to come to one of the facilities and watch this coin be struck, you have an open invitation.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Very good. It doesn't get any better than that. Okay, moving right along into our discussion, and as you all know, this is Eric's final portfolio review, and I would like to kick it off for Eric, okay? Eric, it's all yours.
Well, I'll try to keep it to the point for all of us. I would like to make a motion that we unilaterally accept obverse 7 with modifications that April had described, along with reverse 6, I think it's been tagged A, with the modifications at the perimeter and otherwise in the various images as the committee's sole recommendation.
And I would love to have the privilege of seconding that for two reasons. First, to second Eric's last motion on the committee.
Get out of here.
And just as important as that, to have the privilege and the honor to support a design that Ed Moy assisted in creating, and I served on this committee when Ed Moy was the director of the Mint. I had that pleasure, and so I know that they've received good advice, and with the changes that you've all made, I think the metal makes a lot of sense. Without the changes, I wasn't sure where you're going with this. I appreciate the privilege to second this motion.
Thank you, Don. Any other discussion? Could you bring the reverse back up there? I just wanted to ask, were there six stars in that? If there aren't, did you want six? I kind of.
There are.
There are? Okay. Yeah. Two. They're all there?
Yeah.
Okay. With that, any further discussion? Robert?
I would like to commend our liaisons as a group because of the difficulty. These are all really beautiful designs. This is a lovely portfolio, and I think making your decision, which I feel is an excellent one, probably was a very difficult process. Yeah, I imagine. A very, very lovely piece, this, and I commend you.
Thank you, Robert. Anything further? If not, I'll entertain a vote. All those in favor of the motion made by Eric, second by Don, please signify saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Unanimously carries. Congratulations. So, at this time, is there any other additional business to come before us today? If none, our next meeting is currently scheduled for Tuesday, October the 15th, 2019. Okay. If there's no further discussion or business come before the committee, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
So moved, Eric and Robert. All those in favor signify saying aye.
Aye.
Be safe. Passes.
I know when it's time to go. Thank you.